You're listening to Fakeologist's Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to fakeologist.com/radio3. To participate in the chat, go to fakeologist.com/audio chat. Each day, we compress and upload the day's chat, be it big or small. Leave a quick message, do a whole show. All are welcome when it's related to fakeology. Now, on with today's audio.
Two, two, one, two.
Well, I assume that's coming through clearly. So it is the 29th of March, 2018. John Le Bon coming to you from Brisbane, Australia. Just popped into the audio chat live stream. Thought I would comment on this high-cost model. Of course, Simon Shack, the man behind September Clues and Clues Forum, has released his own model of the solar system, and he's called it the Tycos model, T-Y-C-O-S, apparently the name derived from Tycho Brahe, or Brahe. Not too sure how to pronounce that name, to be perfectly honest. And did this Tycho Brahe character ever exist? I'm not too sure about that either. In any event, today, our friend Ab, the administrator of fakeologist.com, has posted a comment, September Clues, a major motion picture. He's posted a post to his blog at fakeologist.com, and Ab says this: September Clues is a great video, but I will never call it a major motion picture. Simon bashing continues over at cluesforum.info with Satellite Hawk B. Muller, and for some reason Mark Tarkarski seems to think Simon is following a flat earth as described by Miles Mathis. I think he means that the Simon bashing is happening at Peace of Mindful, which is where Mark Tarkarski is one of the chief writers and I think is the administrator of the site as well. Ab continues, Mark, I suggest you talk to Simon directly. He publishes all his contact info. He is a real person, as confirmed by a real person that I've met, Hoi Polloi. Both are brilliant thinkers. Do I have an opinion on the Tycos model? Not really, says Ab. It's beyond my interest and its scope, and does nothing to change my opinion on the raison d'etre of this blog, 9/11 and its exposure by Clues Forum as the biggest military media hoax of our time. So that was me reading out just a short bit of text from Ab on his website, fakeologist.com. So he's making a reference to Peace of Mindful, which is another blog which has several writers, and they tend to focus on media fakery as well to an extent, although from what I can gather, their interests are a little bit more broad than simply media fakery. And from what I can gather, at least one of their main writers seems to believe that war is completely real, which is interesting to me. Then again, there are some fakeologists out there who seem to think that war is real, or at least that's what they seem to want to argue, or at least that's what they seemed to want to argue with me a few weeks ago, where I was like, well, war is a hoax, obviously. And no, it isn't. War is not a hoax. How can you say it's a hoax? I can say it's a hoax because it's clearly fake. And we're on fakeologist.com. And please, let's look at the photos of the V2 rockets. Come on, guys. This is not difficult. But apparently it is difficult. So many different opinions out there on all kinds of topics. But the point is that Simon Shack of September Clues fame has released his Tycos model in the last week or two. And both Fakeologist and Peace of Mindful have discussed it, and the different commenters and contributors have discussed it, and yeah, that's what's going on. Of course, Peace of Mindful appear to be, to a large extent, supportive of or interested in the work of Miles Mathis, whereas Fakeologist, it seems like the person they respect and admire and look up to and discuss is Simon Shack. And of course, Miles Mathis has accused Flat Earth of being a discredit by association strategy. But I'm pretty sure Simon Shack has made the same claim. So it's kind of interesting some of the parallels that are going on here. Fakeologists look up to, and in many cases idolize, Simon Shack. Peace of Mindful look up to, and in many cases idolize, Miles Mathis. Now Peace of Mindful and Fakeologists are discussing what each other are discussing about the alternative cosmology of Simon Shack. Interesting, interesting. We live in this little alternative conspiracy truth realm, the ACT realm, as I call it. Very small little bubble, isn't it? There really aren't that many people here. And it is all largely self-referential, isn't it? And, cosmology, where do we live? What is the nature of this realm in which we live? It's quite understandable that this is a topic that generates a lot of interest for people. Very understandable, if you ask me. And it does seem to lead to a lot of consternation and disagreement and arguments and fighting and accusations of boogeyman, boogeymanishness. He's a boogeyman. He was sent here to be a boogeyman. There's lots of boogeymen out to get us, you know. Oh, yeah, the establishment are very scared of us. They're very scared of people talking about the truth. So they're sending boogeymen to discredit us by association. Ooh, booga, 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 ooh. They really believe this stuff. They really believe it. Fascinating. Fascinating. So, as for me, what do I think about this Tychos model? Well, from what I can gather, it seems to be premised on the assumption that the lights that we see in the sky are representative of or coming to us from solid physical objects, which of course is what we are led to believe when we're children about the official cosmology of the solar system and the so-called universe. Those lights in the sky are giant balls of hydrogen and helium and ooh. And a lot of people, they still believe this, even if they've come to see that the official heliocentric model might not be all it's cracked up to be. They still believe that the lights in the sky are representative of or coming to us from solid physical objects, which might well be the case. But what is the corroborating evidence that we have to support this belief or this hypothesis or this notion? And I'm not aware of any. Now, if you believe in NASA, different story. Because NASA say that Mars is a giant rock. So, okay, there you go. There's your evidence. They've got photos of Mars, little remote control cars, you know, rolling around. There you go. That's all the evidence you need. But if you don't believe in NASA, if you think that perhaps NASA are a bunch of deceivers, then all of a sudden you're like, well, what is my corroborating evidence? This is a solid physical object up there in the sky, all these lights. And so far as I can tell, there is none. So if anyone presents to me a model that is apparently premised on the notion that these are solid physical objects up in the sky, I say, that's fair enough. Cool model, man. Like, that's great. I'm not going to try and take it away from you, but we're operating on such different foundational frameworks. We're probably not going to be able to have an intelligible conversation on this matter. Now, if you want to discuss with me the frameworks, fantastic. My framework is I have no evidence that these lights are solid physical objects. But I'm open to hearing your evidence. What is yours? I've been through this with many people on and off the air. And this is how it always goes. What do you mean, my evidence? What's your evidence that they're not giant solid physical objects? And I'm like, well, I can't prove that they're not either. I don't know. I'm just saying I've got no evidence that they are. And that's about as far as the conversation goes. Tends to be the case. So it's all fairly straightforward, in my opinion. But like I said, I've been through this many times. So I say, hey, if you're out there, you believe those lights are solid physical objects, that's great. That's great. Totally cool. You could be correct, for all I know. But I don't believe that. So why don't we go and visit our friends at Peace of Mindful? Let's take a look at this post from... let's have a look. Who posted this one? Yeah, it was Mark. He posted this on March 27, 2018. According to his dating system, I'd imagine that that's an American dating system. Of course, I'm coming to you on the 29th of March, 2018, but that's Australia time. If you're listening to this live, it'll be the 28th of March, America time. This realm being what it is. So Mark says, the Tychos E. Mueller gave me permission to reprint this comment from a post down below regarding Simon Shack and his new book, the Tychos, the true model of our solar system. I am curious the discussion this book will draw and am keeping my distance, that is, I do not trust Simon Shack, but have never been vocal about it. It is my view that he has drawn interest from some of the very best thinkers in our community, but that his high profile and the fact that he was able to make a major motion picture make him at least suspect. His book is 5 years in the works, he says. That does it no credit in my view, as just about every book in history or current events at Barnes and Noble is years in the making, and none of them are reliable. I am further suspicious as, at the Miles Mathis conference in 2016, he said that he thought Shack was going to turn out to be an anti, that is, one who gathers up support for all the right reasons and then discredits it. He thought that Shack would eventually be a flat earther, and that is not far off the mark, in my view. There is or was a lively discussion in the works at Fakeologist, but it ended at 24 comments. Here is B. Mueller, just to get the ball rolling. And then Mark posts verbatim a comment from B. Mueller, and B. Mueller says that Simon, Shack, Poi Poloi, Nonho Capitano, so the most well-known or prominent contributors to Clues Forum, are all the same person, team, just talking to themselves. Wow, that's a big claim from B. Mueller. He's saying that Poi Poloi, Nonho Capitano, and Simon Shack are all the same entity. And these are all obviously posters on a forum, on a written forum. So they're all sock puppets, is what B. Mueller is suggesting. So there's other things in the comment, but I'll just leave it there. So very interesting. Let me try and tie this all in together for you. So we've got Peace of Mindful, which is a group blog, which gets anywhere from maybe a dozen to 50 or even 100 comments on a typical blog post. They've got four writers, and a lot of their audience seems to be big fans of Miles Mathis. In fact, a few of them claim to have met him at a paid conference where they paid money to Miles Mathis to go and visit him at his house, and he put on a conference for them or something like this. Very interesting. So that's the Peace of Mindful perspective. Then you've got the Fakeologist perspective, which is placing Simon Shack and Clues Forum as a place to look up to. And so now you've got Peace of Mindful writing a post about Simon Shack's model, saying that at least one of them at Peace of Mindful, and of course one person is not representative of the whole group. The bigger the audience, the less that one person can be taken as speaking for a group. However, Mark is one of the chief writers, and he has posted Emuel's comment, you know, verbatim. So at Peace of Mindful, a commenter has said he thinks that all of the accounts at Clues Forum, or all the major ones, are sock puppets. They're all controlled by the same team, that there is some mischief. There's some deception going on. Mark is saying that he does not trust Simon Shack, and he thinks that he is basically becoming a flat earther to discredit all of his previous work. He is likening the Tychos model to flat earth. On the flip side, you've got Ab, the Fakeologist, saying, well, hold on a second there, Chief. We like Simon Shack here. And Ab is saying that he's not getting too far involved in the Tychos model himself because he's not interested. That in itself is interesting because, of course, Ab was the first person to interview Flat Earth Clues, Part 1, Empty Theatre. Yes, Mark Sargent. Ab was the first person to interview Mark Sargent back in the day. And he does have his own sub-blog called ballerskeptic.fakeologist.com, flatearth.fakeologist.com. So Ab certainly was in the past very interested in Flat Earth, or what you might call more broadly alternative cosmology, but he seems not too interested in the Tychos model. His post about the topic only generated a couple dozen replies at fakeologist.com, and three or four of them were my own. So not a great deal of interest at Fakeologist. And when you consider the high esteem that Simon Shack is held in, that is interesting that after all of this time, when he finally releases his model, the broader Fakeologist audience doesn't appear to have a lot to say about it. That is interesting. It's interesting. On the flip side, what I'm trying to explain to the Peace of Mindful audience, and I posted a comment on the Tykos post in question, is that their own, maybe not leader, but the person many of them look up to, Miles Mathis, doesn't seem to have cracked the Cavendish case. In fact, Miles Mathis released a piece on Cavendish years ago where he more or less agreed with the concept. In fact, he did agree, not even more or less. He agreed with the fundamental concept that a man could weigh the moon or Mars or Saturn with heavy balls in a shed here on Earth. Which is, of course, the story of Cavendish, Saint Cavendish, yes, who was knighted, yes. Cavendish was knighted by royalty, yes. And they named a wing after him at Cambridge University, yes. And what did this man do 200 years ago? Well, he arranged four balls on a torsion balance in a shed. Remember, this is 200 plus years ago. And he used a telescope to measure how attracted the balls were to one another. And then he did some clever calculations. And using those calculations, he determined the mass of Earth. And by employing some other mathematical calculations, the mass of the major lights in the night sky. The moon, Mars, Saturn, the sun, you name it. You can measure them all. Wowee, boy oh boy. Very interesting stuff. So the point that I was making to the people at Peace and Mindful was, well, just before you get stuck into Simon Shack, let's just be circumspect here, shall we? Your boy Miles Mathis appears to believe that you can weigh the moon with heavy balls in a shed. Okay? Now, maybe you agree with him. That's fair enough. That's your right. You've got every right to believe that such a feat is possible. But let's try and be circumspect, was the point that I was trying to make. And so, like I said in my post there, I've gotten some good things from the work of both Simon Shack and, to a lesser extent, but still a significant extent, Miles Mathis. And if these are real people, and I don't know if they are or if they're not, but if they're real people, just trying to put out their work and their opinions for others to think about, if that's who they are and if that's what they're doing, then I, for one, appreciate it. And I don't mean any disrespect by the comments that I have put forward. And it seems as though I've been joined. I heard a little glunk glunk. So let's find out who's here with me. Why, it's none other than Rollo. How are you today, Rollo?
Yeah, very well, John. It's nice to hear your voice. And, yeah, it's nice to see you on the front of a cartoon book. What was that again? John Le Bon?
Super Agent John Le
Bon. Super Agent John Le Bon, yes. And is that legit or what? What's going on there?
Well, that from what I can tell, that is a book. What I should do is at least try and order one copy, like say, of the first episode. Because there's like 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 of these books out now. But the first one was called Super Agent John Le Bon and the Brain of the Apocalypse. Yeah. And what I should do is just purchase a copy of that one just to verify for myself that this is a legitimate thing. But from what I can gather, this is a legitimate thing. This is a children's book that has been published and which you can purchase.
Yeah. Are we going out on johnlebon.com? No.
I'm just in the audio chat live stream.
Oh, just me.
Because when I was at the cafe earlier, yourself and about 9 or 10 other people were having a rowdy discussion, so I thought when I get back...
Lively discussion. Did you enjoy the fly? they put, what was it, a little beret. I did enjoy you and, oh my God, you and Gino in the ISS. How did you get up there?
It was a long trip. We had many delays at the place where rockets are fired from, Cape Canaveral or wherever we were. But yeah, Finally we made it up there, and, great hospitality up on the ISS, and, a lot of fun. So thanks to the boys up on the ISS, and hopefully we can see them all again sometime soon.
Yeah, big time. With the arm going missing there, Gina's arm going missing, and the rain coming down on the roof.
I think that's just a conspiracy theory. I think there was just a glitch in the recording software, but... Jenna's aunt was definitely there, and he was definitely with me on the ISS. You saw it for yourself, Rolly. I did.
And I pronounce it Jenna, do I? Jenna or Gina?
No, Gina. Gina's his name.
Gina, yeah. Cool. That was really funny. I love the way you were just sort of going up and down, up and down. I do like comedy. I do like man, not a lot makes me laugh these days, but that made me laugh big time.
I'm the same as you. Not much makes me laugh these days, but that was all Gino's idea, honestly. I got to his place because I was in Melbourne over the weekend for a family event. So I went and caught up with Gino, and I got to his place, and he's like, oh, you got to come and see my green screen set up. I've got it all set up. And I
wasn't, the green screen, yeah. Cool.
Yeah, and I wasn't really like in the most lively of moods at the time. And I didn't even really feel like going on camera, but he basically talked me into it, and I'm glad he did because it was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. I've never really done that kind of green screen thing.
It was superb. The way you cut it together, you know, with the was that real scotch that you had in your hand, like the red label. Yeah.
Well, he gave me the Johnny Walker, and he kept the what was he on? He was on something slight or pricey. I can't remember what it was.
It was so good. It was so good. Honestly. Again, it takes a lot to make me laugh, and you guys having fun up on the ISS. Even with the rain teeming down, it must have been a rainy night because you can hear the rain on the roof.
It was
on the audio.
And I was doing my best not to laugh when Gino is a very funny person. You have to. Mm-hmm. He's got one of those characters where he's always trying to make you laugh, and he's a very enjoyable person to be around. And so when we were recording, I was just doing my best not to laugh. And it was tough. It was difficult, honestly. He's good at ad-libbing comedy, and I think he missed his calling, to be honest.
Look, how old's Gino? I mean, you're 30, and is he your age, or is he a little
older? He's a little bit older than me. I don't know if he's publicly said his age, but I think he's about mid-30s is roughly where he's at.
Oh, it's a great idea. It was a great thing to do. Keep doing those. Maybe do the green screen with the one of your best videos is when you took the Herzikani shot of the plane that goes behind the wingtip, and you can point at it or something. You can point up at it, you know, and have that behind you, and just say, "What's going on here with this wingtip? It's not an artifact. This is something well wrong." You know, with your the super slow-mo of the plane that just slices into the building. It's the first video that comes up with your johnlebon.com, what do you call it, YouTube.
Well, that footage, the first time I saw that footage, like my understanding is one of the people who was most successful in propagating that footage, showing people, look at this, guys, it doesn't make sense, was your old friend, Marcus Heller.
Yeah, that's right. He got it from Godlike Productions, and he got 2 million views on it.
Yep.
And for the life of me, I can't find Marcus Allen anymore, so I don't know where he is. So that's why I actually popped it into the thing, because I was trying to explain to another fellow here, another Australian actually, just have a look at this. Just have a look at this plane. Look at it slice perfectly in, and it doesn't make any sense. But you already said it perfectly already on the video, but it'd be fun to have you behind the green screen or in front of the green screen, obviously, and just point up and just look at the wingtip as it just goes behind that building. Oh, here comes up.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
Thank you, Velocet. And yeah, can you hear that scream? Was in a room?
Yep.
Anyway, just tell me to go away, John, if you want.
No, it's nice to talk to you, man. It's not often that I pop into these chats these days. So I just wanted to pop in and talk about this Tykos model, because finally, sure. I mean, you have a lot of respect for Rollo. You've got a lot of respect. No, I want your opinion on this.
Yeah, sure.
You constantly talk about Simon Shack, almost to the point of deifying the man. As though he is almost like sent to us from the gods, like somewhere between a man and a god, Simon Shack. And finally, he has released his alternative model of the solar system. Have you had a chance yet to give it a read over, Rollo?
Now, this is you've got me there. I have no understanding. The better guy that you would like to talk to would be Gaia. Gaia. You know, Gaia, who's here from time to time, he'd be the better guy. I'm your media factory guy. I enjoy media fakery stuff. When it comes to, I haven't read his book. I haven't got a hold of it yet. Have you got a copy of it yet?
No.
No. So until I get a copy of it, and I need some other fakeologists that are better with the solar system. Sorry, mate, I can't help you with that one.
Do you want to, can I tell you, I find it a little bit interesting that a fakeologist, where there's several of you who are, you have a lot of good things to say about Simon Shack.
Mm-hmm.
It almost seems like people are distancing themselves from this Tychos model. It's almost like people have taken a look at it and gone, we don't want too much to do with this. We'll just say that we're, you know, this is not our thing, you know. This is not our,
sure.
That's what it seems like, from, you know, as an outsider. That's what it seems like.
Look, seriously, if Simon Shack was here right now, which, look, let me just email Simon Shack. What's his email address again? Give me a couple of minutes. I'll email Simon Shack and see if he'll come and talk to us about it. Would that bother you if he's up for it?
I would love to have a chat with Simon Shack.
All right.
I'd be very pleasantly surprised if you could organise that. But, hey, why not give it a go? What's the worst that can happen?
All right. Well, give me a moment, and I'll come back to you if I get a response. Or if I don't get a response in 5 minutes, I'll come back to you. Keep on chatting, and then I'll come back to you if I get one. All right?
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, so Rollo was talking about my little trip to the ISS recently, and that was a bit of fun. And I've got some behind-the-scenes footage of that, which I was hoping to put together in a little video today, so I will get to that later on. But today is Thursday. It is my day off, one of my days off anyway. So what to do with myself? And one thing that I'm tempted to talk about very briefly is this complete and utter insanity that is taking place in Australia at the moment. And I understand that most of the listeners to this call will be in America. So the sport of cricket will mean nothing to you, but this is not really about the sport of cricket. It could be any sport. Cricket just happens to be the popular summer sport here in Australia, and most people take an interest in cricket during the summer. And so the national team is, it's basically our most important national team, because the sports that people play in the winter, Australia is either the only country that plays them, so there's no real international competition, or, say in the case of soccer, our team, our national team is not that good, so we don't really care. But cricket, the team is generally good or better, and they're all over all kinds of promotions, from anything from breakfast cereals to televisions to airlines, you name it. There's Australian cricketers everywhere. Anyway, the point is, forget about the sport. You don't need to understand the sport. All you need to understand is this. The national team recently got caught tampering with the ball, which is against the rules, okay? You get one ball, you're not allowed to manipulate it in certain ways. You are allowed to manipulate it in other ways, but in some ways you're not. And one of the ways you're not allowed to manipulate the ball is to scratch it, because if you do that, you can sort of make the ball swing more when you're bowling it. Anyhow, I'll cut straight to the point of this. Some of the leading players in the team were caught manipulating the ball. It's called ball tampering. And long story short, Australians, For a long time now, I've suspected that Australians are among the five sort of British-derived Western nations. You've got England, say the United Kingdom, and all the countries involved there, New Zealand, Canada, Australia, and the United States. For a long time now, I've suspected that of all of those countries or nations or places, the Australians are the most temperamental, bitter, angry, and quick to judgment, self-righteous. I've suspected this for a while. I don't want it to be true because I grew up here, and most of the people I know are Australian. So I didn't want this to be true, but the evidence has been mounting for some time, and this is beyond any doubt now. You should have seen people come out of the woodworks to decry this horrible, horrible thing that our captain had done, tampering with the ball. Oh, it's against Australian values. It's the worst thing. It's terrible. How do I tell my kids? How do I tell my kids? Oh, yeah. No, it was full on. The last week or so has been full on. And I should explain, it all happened in a match that's happening in South Africa. Our team is currently touring South Africa playing cricket matches there. And it was full on response. Prime Minister came out and said it was un-Australian. They've been labelled cheats. People were calling for their heads, so they should be sacked, should be banned from the game permanently. The captain should be stripped of his job. The coach should be stripped of his job. Should never be allowed to play cricket again. On and on and on. All of these attacks were going. And the funny thing is that the team that Australia is currently playing, South Africa, their captain has been caught ball tampering not once, but twice. And he's still the captain of South Africa. And South Africans are not saying that their captain should be sacked. England were caught ball tampering. Ball tampering is part of cricket. It's a little bit like, say, in... there's rules against, for instance... Let me think of a sport that you guys will understand. Okay, in ice hockey, right? You can't just run up to someone and check them with a stick, okay? Against the rules. If you do it, you get penalised. But if you do it, that's not necessarily the same as cheating. You have broken the rules, and there are penalties that apply. So it is in soccer. You're not allowed to dive. Diving is against the rules. And if you get caught doing it deliberately, you can be penalised for it. It's not quite the same as cheating. It's against the rules. You get penalised if you get caught. You shouldn't do it. That doesn't necessarily mean it's cheating. Okay? Well, that's what ball tampering is in cricket. You're not supposed to do it. But let me tell you right now, at local levels and all the way up to the National League, this is just part of the game. Australians, most of them don't understand this. They don't want to understand this. What they want to do is jump on their high horses and publicly execute a man. That's what they want. They want to act as though they are these moral arbiters of right and wrong, and they want to see Steve Smith burn. And they want to see the vice captain, David Warner, burn. And they want to see anybody in any way connected to it burn. Because these are sick, sick people. These are very sick people. Bitter, jaded, temperamental, lynch mob mentality, let me tell you right now. It is something to behold. And for the last week, I've been taking it all in. I've been reading the forums. I've been even listening. When I was in Melbourne, there's a radio station that is just sport all day. They just talk about sport. So when I was down in Melbourne, I had a rental car, so I was tuning into the SEN, listening to the talkback callers. And, saying the most horrible things. They want a man to lose his job and never be allowed to play the game again. Mind you, this is the captain of the national team. This is the best batsman in the country that we've seen for so long. They want him to never be allowed to play again because he got caught doing something, which the captain of the opposing team has been caught doing twice and was never stripped of captaincy. Right?
Yeah, but Darren Lehman looks like he's getting away scot-free.
I reckon they'll sack him. Rolly, you tell me your opinion. I mean, you know a little bit about cricket. We've discussed it before.
I've taken the greatest catches better than maybe what was the one that old mate took in 1981 where he ran in and he caught it. Oh, man. He scored 100 on his test debut. Oh, man. I've forgotten his name. He was friggin' fantastic. Look, I love cricket. Look, this whole thing stinks of something. It's all over the news. There's nothing else. So what are the news covering up? You know what I mean?
I don't quite have that kind of mindset. I'm more interested in the public reaction.
Yeah. Look, I played the game.
I played Australians.
You're a fast bowler, right? I'd face you.
I was never fast. No.
All right, medium.
Yeah, I was a medium pace,
medium pace. Look, I'd face you, and look, I'd have no problems smashing a six over off you. If I could do that.
I can get the ball to swing, and you can't hit the ball when it's swinging. I know the dark art of
a four-piece or a two-piece, right?
Well, most of the cricket I played growing up was two-piece, but for my last couple of seasons of senior cricket, it was four-piece because the higher divisions use four-piece balls. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
And of course, you know why?
Do you play on turf, or do you play on astro, or do you play on concrete?
Now, the league that I was in, it was on astro. But you know why the higher divisions used four-piece balls across not just Australia?
It stops them swinging so much.
Like, swing is a big part of the bowling. So when you play with four-piece balls, the ball doesn't swing as much, right? Yeah. But what do you think about how quickly Australians have been whipped into a lynch mob mentality? Doesn't that strike you as a little bit startling, how quickly...
Well, I've got you here. Let's just do it now. Let's just go to the latest... Well, let's just do it right now. see what's going on.
Most of these clowns have never played cricket in their lives, and they're coming out saying that the captain of the national team should be banned for life for doing something that the opposition captain, in the very game where he was caught doing this, has done it twice. Vernon Philander is one of the leading bowlers of South Africa. He's been caught doing it. So when the test match starts tomorrow, Australia will be missing their two opening batsmen and their captain, who have been banned from the match, and two of them have been banned for a whole year. Meanwhile, the South African captain and his main strike bowler, who have also been caught doing the exact same thing, will be lining up to play.
Okay, so it says Smith ball tampering. Yeah, it says Smith's ball tampering reaction revealed. The moment Steve Smith's career disintegrated inside the Aussie dressing room has been revealed. This, here's what he said. So you have to go to news.com.au if you want to see that. The exact moment that his career crumbled. Again, look, I don't watch a lot of sport, but what's the big fakeologist angle here? Is, do you think they're...
I think fakeologists, one of the things that we learn when we learn about media is psychology, individual psychology, crowd psychology, sociology. We're learning about the human condition. And so the angle here is, in Australia for the past week, we have seen firsthand evidence, time and time again, person after person, how quickly these people, when they're given a chance to vent their frustrations with life at a lightning rod, as a central point, at a person who's being lynched, how quickly they turn into primitive, angry, violent-minded creatures with no circumspection whatsoever. These are truly, truly mentally damaged people, in my opinion.
I think so. I think so. All right. Look, can I switch topics?
Absolutely.
Is that okay?
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, there's a guy called
Before you do that, can I just say, for all the listeners out there who are into cricket, just quickly, I don't like David Warner. I think he's a wanker. And Steve Smith is a terrible captain. His tactics are terrible. His body language is terrible. I don't like him. I don't like these guys. But the idea that...
Steve Waugh's comments.
I don't like Steve Waugh either. He was one of the most selfish players I've ever seen in my life.
Right. But what about Alan Border as a captain? No, Alan Border.
Hear me out. He was before my time.
All right.
I generally do not like the Australian cricketers as cricketers. I don't like them. But I'm just saying that in this instance, we've got Australia turning on one of their own for doing something that his very opposition captain has done twice before. Mm. And what I'm trying to suggest is that they're doing this because deep down, these are angry, angry people. They're looking for something to become self-righteous about. That's what I'm suggesting.
All right.
And you know what? Steve Smith and Dave Warner, they're going to be okay. They're multimillionaires. They're going to be okay, but their reputations are in tatters. It's a tragedy. It's like a Greek tragedy.
Yeah, well, look what happened to the multimillionaire cheat, the South African guy. I mean...
Hansie Cronje.
Look what happened to him.
Yeah, he's dead. He's dead.
I know. It just, and I believe it too. I think he... Was that the universe... was that coincidental? What do you reckon?
Well, is he really dead? It was a small plane crash. It wasn't a large commercial plane crash. It was a small one. Yeah. If you have been disgraced publicly, but you've already made all your money, maybe, I'm not saying this did happen, but for all we know, the organisers to be involved in a plane crash, and off he goes and lives in the Maldives or something. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah, it could be. Could be. But we don't have any evidence for that, so let's... Shane Warne, there was a scandal with him and Mark Waugh and with the betting scandals. There's been a lot of betting scandals. I mean, none of these guys are totally clean.
You know what we're going to do? I'm going to show you footage. I'm going to put this in the live chat stream of Mark Waugh. Mark Waugh, who was one of the best slips fielders...
They call him Afghanistan. Afghanistan is his nickname, yeah.
The forgotten war. He was a terrific, terrific slips fielder. Against Pakistan in a match, he dropped 3 catches, which even park cricketers would be embarrassed to drop. He dropped 3 of them in one match against Pakistan, who were known match-fixing cheaters, right? Okay. Somehow, this just goes without attention. People don't know about it. People don't talk about it because people have the attention spans of gnats. They can't put two and two together, you see. What they need is to be told when to get angry, like a 2 minutes of hate. So that's what Malcolm Turnbull did. That's what James Sutherland did. That's what all of these media mouthpieces did. They said, right, here's the man to be angry at, Steve Smith, Dave Warner. Get angry at them, and, oh, once you give the masses a chance to get hateful, they love it. They love it. They are truly primitive creatures. Goodness gracious me. What a time to be alive.
Where exactly are you putting it into the live stream chat?
Yeah, let me, I'll find it for you right now, man. Mark Waugh.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Let me find it right now. Mark Waugh drops catches Pakistan.
I'm pretty sure you think there were easy catches that me or you as like, you know, sort of weekend guys. Could have taken.
Well,
I've snaffled some pretty good catches in my time.
Well, me, I could definitely take them because I wasn't a very good cricketer, but my fielding was probably one of my strengths. So I could definitely take these. But I'm telling you right now, I've coached cricket at a local level. These catches, I would expect local park cricketers to take them. I'd be disappointed in them if they didn't. I'd be like, boys, that's not good enough. You come on, you know.
Well, look. Back in the day, remember Jeff Lawson? He came and did what was it? Oh man, he was so up himself. I liked Jeff Lawson a lot until he came to my university and he gave a speech, and apparently he disgraced himself and did something silly at a local, and I asked him about it, and he told me to fuck off. Hold on. Just can I get a mute for a sec? Sorry about that. Yeah. I don't need to bring up names. Look, I've met a lot of famous cricketers. I mean, Daryl Hare. I mean, you must have some. I mean, this is for an international audience. Fakeologist.com. Daryl Hare is one of the. Do you remember him and the controversy about him, about the chucker, the
Mutaya Muralitharan?
Yes. Do you remember that? And have you got anything to say about that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, he was a chucker. There's no question about that. But he got away with it because he was Sri Lanka's best bowler. And the Asian teams, Pakistan, India, Sri Lanka, they all work together. Anytime any of their players are accused of anything, they all threaten to take their bat and ball and go home. They accuse Australia or England of being racists. And they say, no, you can't say this about our players, that they're chuckers or that they're cheats. We won't play you anymore. You see? And India has a lot of power now because of their Indian Premier League. So, that's
he was a chucker. In my opinion, in my humble opinion, 100%. He was a chucker. Yeah.
Of course he was.
Yeah, and he could get so much spin on that. And whereas Shane Warne was just brilliant. That fucking bowl that he bowled where it just, in the air, it just moved and bowled Mike Gatting on the last ball of the day, or what is it, 1992 or something. It was just magic.
It was a great Shane ball. I'm not sure if it was the last ball of the day or if it was Shane Warne's
first second
ball.
Last
in, ball. I think it was his first ball in the Ashes. That was like the significant thing. It's the first time the Poms have seen him. And Gatting goes to pat up, and the ball just says, see you later. I've come to Bales. Yeah, great stuff.
What's that on super slow-mo? Because we've got the ability these days. What's that on super, super slow-mo? And what's the ball in the air? It just, there's no way that Gatting had a chance of hitting that ball. Shane Warne.
Big boy now, Mike Gatting. You should see him. He was in the commentary for the Ashes. Boy, is he a big boy now? Oh, yeah. Shane Warne is another one. Complete wanker. You know what I mean? But Australians don't mind that if they're successful, right? And I think that's where a lot of this self-righteousness is coming from. They've got someone to pick on now, you know?
I think Shane Warne is one of the best leg spinners. He's even better than, I know Benno's dead, but I think Shane Warne outdoes even him. He's just,
well, that's what the statistics
say. So good.
That's the stats. The stats make that point pretty clearly. So,
yeah.
But you know what, actually, when I was a kid, I looked up to Shane Warne. I used to bowl leg spin myself as a kid.
Why don't you look up to him anymore?
Because I'm growing up now, and I can see these people for what they are. You know what I mean?
Well, what is he now? He's just a ex-cricketer.
Do you listen to his commentary?
No, I don't. But
no, trust me, listen to him. Dude, next time I listen to him on the Channel 9 commentary, he's insufferable. Insufferable.
Right.
Hey, good on him. Hey, listen, these guys are successful. They make millions of dollars on them. You know, good work. But when you're a kid, you don't see it that way. You look at them as, when you're a 12, 14-year-old kid, you're looking up to these guys as heroes almost. That's the way I look up to these people. Whereas now it's like, heroes, give me a break, man. They play cricket. A joke.
Well, he's still a hero to me. And look, I don't begrudge anyone who has become the best of the best that they can be. And I know that one day, John Lavon, you're going to be the best. Can I change the subject?
Yeah, please do.
All right. There's a guy in Scotland that taught his dog to, when he said, gas the Jews, that is a pug dog, and he lifted its arm. What are your thoughts on that? It lifted its arm as in a Hitler salute. His name's Count Dacula. Have you been watching that?
From what I understand, this story is a little bit old, though. This is not a new thing. Isn't this from, like, last year?
It was a couple of years ago, but he just got sentenced. He just got found guilty today. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Or a couple of days ago, yeah. Count Dacula. I'll put the thing in.
Jews, pug.
Yes.
Google will help me out here.
I will.
Crime for filming pugs, Nazi salutes, BBC News. Yeah. Mark Meacham's clip was viewed more than 3 million times on YouTube.
Yeah.
A man who filmed a pet dog giving Nazi salutes before putting the footage on YouTube has been convicted of committing a hate crime. Mark Meacham, 30, is the same age as me, recorded his girlfriend's pug, Buddha, responding to statements such as gas the Jews and see hail by raising its paw. But police were alerted and he was arrested for allegedly committing a hate crime. The original clip had been viewed more than 3 million times on YouTube. And let's see. Sheriff Derek O'Carroll found him guilty of a charge under the Communications Act.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Well, what does it say? What was the final? He's been convicted of committing a hate crime, but have they sentenced him?
I think we're still waiting on the sentence, but he's been convicted. That's the thing. I mean, okay. So let me just explain it. There's plenty of videos out there, and I'll put them into the show notes. The fellow, he's unseen. He doesn't, like, he's got those big things in his ears, and he's covered in tats. But, and he's really, really kind of prominent on YouTube. But the thing is it a hate crime? And what is a hate crime to you, John? I mean, you're a bit of a philosopher, right? If I taught my dog, if I said, gas the Jews, to my dog, and the dog lifted its paw as a Nazi salute or whatever, is that a hate crime, and do I deserve a year in jail or 5 years in jail or something for that?
In my world, if I'm in charge of things?
Yes, if you're in charge.
No, of course not. This is insane.
Yes.
This is utterly insane.
Yeah.
In my world. Now, in the world as it is right now, is this a hate crime? Well, apparently in Scotland, it is. But how much do we believe this story is the question. I mean, is there a real-life man named Mark Meacham who is going to spend time in prison for posting a video that was offensive? Is that the case? I guess it could be. I mean, if you take the story on face value. But my question for you, Rollo, is you and I have both on the air publicly said that we don't believe the official 6 million story of the Holocaust.
Yeah.
I don't believe it. You don't believe it. I go even further and I say that it seems to me ridiculous. When you actually sit down and think about it and look at the evidence, it's preposterous, is what I say. I've said it before. And it wouldn't be very hard for anyone to track down you or me, and nothing's happened to us. So,
well,
do we really have to be afraid of this stuff? I mean, what are they going to do, man? If they take me to court and say, oh, you said you don't believe in the Holocaust. You said it was preposterous. This is a hate crime we've got laws for this shit, don't we? The Racial Discrimination Act or whatever. It's like, hold on a second there, fellas. I don't believe any of World War II. None of it. None, Your Honour. I don't believe in V2 rockets. I don't believe in Adolf Hitler. I don't believe there's a real war going on. I don't believe the 70 million dead figure of the overall I don't believe any of it, Your Honour. So which parts am I going away for here? Is it just the Holocaust part that I have to believe? Am I allowed to not believe the rest of it? Is that okay? So there's just one part that I'm not allowed to believe. Is that so? I have to say I believe that part, But the rest, I can be honest and say I don't believe it. Really, Your Honor? Okay. Well, I guess I'll do my time. If I've done a crime, I guess I'll do the time. Now we all know. You know what I mean?
Yeah. All right. Well, let me read what I write. I'll just put this into the live stream chat for you. This is Tommy Robinson interviewing Count Dacula. But what I wrote, I'd just like to read it out on the record, Your Honor, is this. Where is it? Fuck the ADL. Fuck the JDL, the Anti-Defamation League. Fuck the Jewish Defamation League. Say one joke, gas the Jews, to get your girlfriend's dog to raise its paw, and this is what you get. And then that's Count Dacula. Why doesn't Steven Spielberg get a year's jail for Swindler's List, or John Cleese get a year's jail for the Germans episode of Fawlty Towers? Free speech, again, is not hate speech unless you upset those precious cunts from the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, or the JDL, the Jewish Defense League, whose jobs rely on hate speech. This hate speech bullshit mantra. It's the whole Swindler's List movie, to me, is hate speech. Why isn't Spielberg in jail? He should be in jail to me. That upsets me. Do you see what I mean? Spielberg should be in jail.
Why would you get, like, don't say this the wrong way, but why would you get angry about it? You know what I mean? That doesn't help you.
Because I got triggered, obviously, by this Count Dacula thing. Dankula. Let me get his name right. He does look like a dodgy character. But, I mean, to teach your dog or your girlfriend's dog just to lift its paw when you say gas the Jews and possibly be given a year in jail for fucking saying gas the Jews. Is that hate speech? Not to me. What do you reckon? What say you, Jono?
Well, I don't believe in this idea of hate speech. So,
yeah,
like you're asking me, you're saying to me, is this a thing? And I'm like, I don't believe in that thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So let's pretend that we do believe in hate speech for a moment. All right. For sake of argument.
Go for it.
How about teaching children that their ancestors tried to commit genocide? You know, how about emotionally abusing little white children and convincing them that they should feel guilty for something they never did? If there is hate speech, then how about speech which leads people to hate themselves? Little innocent white children, for instance. If there is hate speech, I would suggest that is a more appropriate example of it. And if you look through the Department of Education curriculum, which I've done in the past here in Australia, you will find that in at least one state, this is explicitly stated as the purpose of the education, to get the little children to empathise with how it must have felt when their ancestors were trying to genocide these poor little brown people here in Australia. Little children don't have any... don't have any way of sort of extracting themselves emotionally from that. They're being asked to use their empathy to hate themselves and to hate their own ancestors and to hate their own skin. It's pretty sick stuff, if you ask me. Pretty sick stuff indeed. But look, the way I see it, people have YouTube channels. They want to say what they want to say. Let them say it. You know, people say nasty shit about me. They should be allowed to say that. Why not? In fact, people say very hateful stuff about me. They should be allowed to say that. Why not? You know? If people want to say... I hate John LeBron. I wish he was dead. All right. If that's what people want to say, let them say. So it doesn't actually hurt me. It's just someone saying something, isn't it? You know? So that's the way I see it. Although I will say, I will add something else, though. You know, if somebody does have a problem with the Jews as a group of people, I don't see how saying gas them is appropriate. It's, be saying it as a joke. What you should do is just say to the smart dude, Mark, do you actually want to gas the Jews? And he'd be like, no, it's just a joke. It's like, well, there you go. It's just a joke.
That's it.
You know?
But so maybe I'll suggest everybody who's listening to me and John LeBron, johnlebron.com, fakeologist.com, go to computingforever.com. There's a plenty of other sites. Just look this up because it's not being taken down off YouTube. YouTubers obviously overwhelmed. I don't know if they've got these 10,000 people. They might want to take Simon Shack's video down, and they might want to take Jesse Waugh's video down, but they they can't get away with this one. This one is too big for them. The David Hogg thing, everyone knows David Hogg, that little twerp that is a lying scumbag, in my opinion, the Parkland shooting in Florida. He's a little twerp who all he wants to do is just get into the media, and he's a disgusting. To me,
disgusting. Really?
Yeah, disgusting. Sorry, because he shows no emotion, and he's supposed to have seen dead. His dead mates, like 17 of them, dead.
Was it 17?
And there he is, and he's been caught red-handed.
Was it really 17?
17.
Yeah. Was it again? Hold on, let me look this up. Was it called the Parkland shootings? Because I didn't really look into this one, because it's another baby hoax. I don't really care. Let's find out. Let's have a look. Was it really 17? It was, too. 17 counts of premeditated murder and 17 attempted murders. So you've got your double 17.
Yes.
Now, you know that 17 in Tarot is the number of the star. And in occult teaching, the great star is Sirius. Our friend Simon Shack's favourite star, Sirius.
The thing that fell down in, what was it, the Truman Show?
That's correct. Yep.
Yeah.
Interesting indeed. Yeah, so the thing is, though, man, why? I mean, when you say they're disgusting, I mean, do you think Donald Trump is disgusting? He's just an actor doing his job. Same as his David Hogg kid. They're just actors. Barack Obama. I don't find him disgusting. He's just an actor doing his job. It's all just a show.
What about George W. Bush? He put over 150 people to death. No, but when he was the governor of Texas, he put over 150 people to death. He's known as the highest. Yeah, and people that were mentally disabled, he put to death. He's
really?
A disgusting human being. Well,
I could look it up, but who would be? Okay, then let's look it up. George W. Bush and governor executions. Let's see what the official story is.
Sure.
Let's have a look. Bush and the Texas Death Machine from RollingStone.com. Yeah, let's have a look. We've also got one from the New York Times on the record, Bush and the Death Penalty. This will be good. Yeah, let's see. George W. Bush had not quite finished his second week as governor of Texas in 1995 when the first death penalty cases of his administration landed on his desk. They would make for quite an initiation. Two executions were scheduled for January 31, a rarity known on death row as a doubleheader. Because he would be out of Texas at the time of the execution, Mr. Bush reviewed the inmates' clemency appeals with his legal staff, approved the executions, and instructed the lieutenant governor to proceed in his absence. The two convicted murderers, Clifton Russell and Willie Williams, became the first inmates put to death under Mr. Bush, though hardly the last. In his 5 years as governor, Mr. Bush has presided over the executions of 111 men.
111. There you go.
Far more than any other governor in any other state since the Supreme Court in 1976 allowed reinstatement of the death penalty. Texas leads the nation in putting inmates to death. In 1997, it executed 4 inmates in 1 week, 8 in 1 month, and 37 for the year. All modern records. So that's an overview that comes to us by way of New York Times in an article dated January 7, 2000, about 18 months before the spectacular day. So what do you think of that, Rollo? Do you believe, when you read a story like this in the news, do you believe this kind of story?
Well, again, I don't want to get into an argument about... I don't believe in the death penalty at all. I think it's... So 111... Yeah, it could make you think that, look, yeah, maybe I was triggered on that. But I spoke to A.A. Morris. A.A. Morris agreed with me, and A.A. Morris is a way better researcher than me and you.
He's a better researcher than me, is he?
Well, no, I'm just saying.
What are you saying?
I'm not trying to trigger you. I'm just saying A.A. Morris has done a whole lot of, what's that?
I'm just asking you to clarify your position. You're saying that A.A. Morris is a better researcher.
A.A. Morris, when I spoke to him, he agreed with me. He just said it's despicable that this guy, well, no, look, I'm paraphrasing. I can't give you exact words. I can give you exact words with John Laws saying you're a blockheaded bastard, but I can't give you, I'm just saying that I don't like George W. Bush because you obviously leading up to this, whatever, the plane slicing into a building on 9/11, that was the worst period of my life, and you were probably too young to even appreciate it, really, were you?
No, I was 14. I remember that day well.
Yeah, where were you?
No, I remember all of that well. Back then, we only had 5 TV stations in Australia, 2, uh-huh. 7, 9, 10, and 28. You can't really count 31. And 7 and 9 were running 9/11 non-stop for days, if not weeks. And even 10 for the first couple of days was non-stop. So for a period there, all 3 commercial stations were 9/11 around the clock. I remember it very well. It was a big deal.
Yeah, for a big week.
Deal. Huge deal.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I remember it. Just as, well, if
no,
you're 14, I'm 48,
nobody,
so I would have been...
Nobody
33.
Died, nobody got hurt. All right? There were no planes. Nobody died, and nobody got hurt.
No. We've spoken to
but you know, lately, Rollo, you can't really say that nobody died or nobody got hurt, because apparently fakeologist has been taken over by a realologist faction. There are some realologists who have decided that they get to decide what can and can't be said about media fakery. And they say that you can't say nobody died and nobody got hurt. You can't say that. And then I say to them, why can't I say that? I'm saying it right now. No, you can't say that. Well, again, I'm asking you a question. Why can I not say it? I just said it. And I'll say it again. No one died, no one got hurt. So what's the problem? So I don't know. There's a weird little takeover going on here at fakeologist.com. I have to say, I'm not a big fan of it. I don't like this idea that...
Who's saying that?
No, I think Guy is leading the charge. I think your mate Guy is leading this charge. He wants this to be realology.com.
Look, before you say my mate, look, it's just the same when I met Delcar or Ab. Yeah, you can say my mate, but when it comes to this subject, it's a serious subject. And look, from like when I spoke to Jesse War and Jesse War said he was there on 9/11, and I asked him specific questions. I said, "What did you see? What did you see? Did you see the collapses and that?" And he was evasive and whatnot. And you and John Adams were having a chat afterwards, and as you had every right to do, and put comments in afterwards. All I was trying to do is ascertain as what happened that day, and I still don't have any better evidence from.
Well, let me respond.
Simon,
go. For context here, Jesse War is the man responsible for nuke lies. And I personally have cited Ray West of BigLies.com, the re-revisionist, as a huge inspiration for me. When you hear me say to someone, what's your evidence? I got that from Ray West at Big Lies, right? He's the guy I got it from. Back in 2015, probably, I saw the clip of him going around, I guess it's somewhere in England, saying to people, have you heard the theory that nuclear bombs are a hoax, right? And then there was like one guy in maybe a cafe or a store who's like, I know they're not a hoax. And then Ray West goes, what's your evidence? And I was like, that's beautiful, right? He's not trying to convince the guy. He's just saying, okay, maybe you're right. What's your evidence? Let's get straight to the heart of the matter. What's your evidence, right? You just told me you know for a fact they're real. What's your evidence, right? Well, he's the guy who I got that from. So anyway, it turns out, and I only learned this recently thanks to Ab's interview with Jesse War a week or two ago, that in fact Ray West had taken over the forum from Jesse War. I knew Jesse War had done the video, but I didn't know that Jesse War was responsible for the forum and that Ray West had allegedly kind of taken over the forum from Jesse. This is all news to me. So anyway, Jesse War did nuclear's video. This is going back, what, the best part of 10 years, I suppose? And I didn't even realize he still had a YouTube channel. And then a week or two ago, out of nowhere, he joins the Discord server here at fakeologist.com, and he conducts an interview with Ab, or Ab conducts an interview with Jesse War. And it was very eye-opening, and I was very appreciative of the interview that Ab had conducted with Jesse. It was good to listen to, fascinating.
people like Rollo had joined the call at the end and said, oh, Jesse, you know, you've changed our lives. Thank you so much. You know, you're a great guy, blah, blah, blah. All good stuff. A couple of days later, and Jesse comes to a Discord server audio chat. This wasn't an interview. This was just a chat. And next thing you know, he's getting grilled by Rollo and Napoleon Wilson, I believe, who were basically suddenly turning on him going, what, you claim that you saw what happened on 9/11? You're a liar. Now, that might not have been their words directly, but that was the point they were making. So having said what a great guy he was, changed their lives, yada, yada, now he's saying, they're saying, oh, Jesse, we're going to interrogate you live on the air. But let me tell you, as someone who's been through this many times, it is never fun to have people tell you that they respect your work and then, live on the air, start interrogating you as though you're an enemy. Never pleasant. Very unpleasant thing for a person to go through. It's like, hold on, you just told me that you love me and now you're interrogating me live on the air. If you've got these problems, you could have asked me off the air, right? And so it seems to me like Jesse didn't quite understand what he just walked into, because there is a severe paranoia in this alternative conspiracy truth realm. Severe paranoia that when you're in it, you can't see for what it is. When you get out of it, you're like, holy shit, that is one paranoid bunch of people. Goodness gracious me. And so it seemed like they were trying to suggest or imply or propose.
Oh, I was trying to suggest or imply that yeah, nothing hit like the buildings.
Yeah. Now, let me tell you this, Rollo. I left my comment on that audio chat afterwards saying, guys, you can't, it's not very polite to tell people that you love their work and change your life and then interrogate them live on the air and cut them off and interrupt them. Not very polite. But let me tell you this, Rollo. I've since then gone and watched Jesse Waugh's video where he retraces his steps of 9/11. And I find it very suspicious indeed. Very suspicious. Watch the whole thing. It's like 10. I put it on my desktop right now, actually. Let me see.
I watched John LeBron. I watched it before I spoke to him. He sent it to me directly, and I watched it before I invited him to join me as a guest.
Well, let me tell you this. Just hear me out.
Go for it.
I think there are two elements to this. The first element is you scrutinizing or asking for more information about his story. Valid, worthwhile, I'm glad you did it. The other element is how you go about doing it. And I personally, as someone who has been on the receiving end of these kind of interrogations without warning, I can tell you that in my personal opinion, it's always best if you believe someone is telling a story, a porcupine story, or is being misleading, ask your questions, let them speak. Okay? Firstly, it's more polite. Secondly, if they are telling porcupines, they'll hang themselves. You don't have to interrupt them and do all of that kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's my personal opinion. So hopefully you can take that as constructive criticism.
I will. Here's my question for you, John LeBron. Just me and you. Are you in this for the love or the money?
I don't think I'm going to get enough love or money to make it worth doing.
Are you in this neither for the love of the neither truth of or the
neither
money? Things.
Neither. Neither.
What are you doing it for?
Well, just hear me out. Just hear me out. You ask a question. Okay, this is a good example. You ask a question, let me answer. Right? I'm not getting enough love or money to make what I'm doing worth the last 4 years of my life. Okay? So my motivations have changed over the last 4 years because I used to believe in this truth movement and people are good people and they really care. No. Most of the people in this scene are not good people. They're self-righteous people who want you to believe that they're good. But if you just analyze their behavior, no, these are not good people. But I bought into it. I was foolish and naive. I thought they were. So over the 4 years, my motivations have changed. And now I just feel lucky that there's enough people, not many, but enough, who value what I'm doing to make it worth my time. And it's almost like a part-time job now. It's basically like a part-time job in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm doing it for. It's like, well, I'm interested in this stuff. And some other people are as well, so I'll share it with them, and that makes it worth my time, and that's about it. But I don't get enough love. I mean, most of the people right now, most of them hate me as well. I'm the guy they love to hate. People need a boogeyman to hate, you see. That's how the average retarded human works. They love boogeymen on the telescreen, on their YouTube videos, whatever. They love to think they've got enemies. It makes their pathetic lives meaningful, you see. So I get way more hatred than I get love. So I'm not doing it for love, no. And as for money, I don't get much money doing this. I mean, go to my website, add up the number of people on the membership section, and multiply that by 20, and that's the amount of money that I get doing this. It's not much. Right. It's not much. Right.
Well, look,
I don't get enough love or money.
Look.
Not that I'm complaining, because I feel I'm the world's leading skeptic, and I get paid, not much, but a little bit,
well,
to do it.
The world's leading skeptic would be a guy called Shermer, Michael Shermer.
He's a skeptic
society guy.
You give me a debate with Michael Shermer, and I will absolutely destroy him. It'll be like a dog and
but
a rat.
If you want love, and listen to me, John.
Like a pit
bull. Listen to me. Adam Miller, there's a lovely guy called Adam Miller.
Tear him apart.
A lovely guy called Tim, fakeologist. There's a lovely guy called, what's his name, Rick. A lovely guy. And we'll get interviews with all of these in the next coming days.
Kelly, people are afraid that when they come on, they'll be interrogated. People do not want to sign up to be interrogated. That's the other reason why it's pragmatic to be polite to people. Even if you think they're lying, it is still pragmatic.
No. John, the only reason I gave Jesse a little bit of a hard time, and again, go back and listen to the audio, was because he said he was there on 9/11. No one else. You weren't there on 9/11, so I'm not going to give you a hard time. The only hard time I'll give you is, like, what are you in this for? Is it to make JLB the biggest name in the world as, like, another Alex Jones or something? I don't know.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
Well, look, I want to believe your heart's in the right place. I want to believe it. But there are a lot of people that don't.
Well, I don't have to. It doesn't make a difference.
Think that you're there trying to make money.
Well, I'm trying to make money. That's obvious. There's a membership subscription service on my website, so I'm trying to make money.
Right.
So if that's what they believe, they're correct about that. It's obvious. You only have to be able to read English to see that.
Well, I spoke to Kelly. What's her name? Oh, she's a lovely lady.
Who isn't trying to make money, though? I mean, can anyone out there live without money? I don't get it. Isn't everyone trying to make money? Like, I don't.
Yeah, that's a good point. Everyone, is trying to make money, but yeah.
Unless they're being heralded
off the truth, though. Off the truth, though. All right. Well.
So what? Hold on. What's better to make money off the truth or off a job that you don't believe in? Like, where you just turn up.
I believe in this, but
how is turning up and being bossed around by someone who is only your boss because they got there before you or they've kissed more ass than you? How is making money doing that better than making money doing what I'm doing? Please, I'm all ears. Explain to me how that's more virtuous or more moral. Please tell me. I'm all ears.
Yeah, I guess that someone who got there before you. But I guess, again, listen, is the truth, and the truth, I mean, when you give out you say now, I don't owe you anything. I don't owe you anything. You make that a stipulation. I don't owe you anything to anyone that listens to your free stuff that you put on YouTube and whatnot. You make it. I don't get it. Explain to me, like I'm a 4-year-old, why you would charge for whatever you have to say that you've read in books, that the books have written already, and that those people have already made money on it. Do you know what I mean? I just don't get it. Explain that to me.
I will happily do that. But first, I want you to address what I asked you a moment ago. Tell me how turning up to a job and getting bossed around is more virtuous way to make money than doing what I'm doing. Explain it to me.
Man, I've lived that life. I'm 48 years old.
That's the life that most people lead. In fact, I have a real job where that's what I do. Okay? So you tell me.
It sucks. It sucks, doesn't it? It sucks.
Well, apparently it doesn't. Apparently it's more virtuous to do than what I'm doing, so explain to me why.
Well, let me help you out. Just get yourself a keyboard and learn to play the piano, or get yourself a guitar and play the guitar, and become famous that way.
You're not addressing my question, are you? Explain to me.
I can't answer that question for you.
No, you can't, because it's absurd. It's completely absurd. This idea that it's more virtuous to make money working a full-time job, being bossed around, than doing what I'm doing, it's an absurd claim.
And that's why you can't defend it.
But if, like, you're a psychologist, you'll understand. Money is
from the sidelines. That's what they do. Like the pathetic cowards they are.
People believe in money, John. People believe in money, and there's no way we can... If they didn't believe in it, it's bits of plastic. Can you eat money? No. You can't eat it. I can't eat it. But if you don't have it, I know. And now they want to digitize it. Explain to me what the hell Bitcoin is in like 1 minute or less. What
are you getting tangential?
I don't even know.
You're getting tangential. Let's just get something clear right from the start. If somebody doesn't want to sign up to my website, they don't have to. If they want to sign up, they can. Many people do sign up and they stay. Some people sign up, they don't stay for long. They disappear. Mm-hmm. Entirely up to them. I don't see how this is a problem. What I do see as a problem is people who want to claim that they're virtuous or moral or righteous, doing fuck all, and then sitting on the sidelines and sniping people like me. They're the problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not sniping at you. I'm just asking you direct questions.
No, at least you come on the air. At least you... Nonsense. Most of them sit on the sidelines like the cowards they are.
Yeah, what do you call them? The peanut gallery or something. Miss Ali. Yeah.
Well, let me tell you this. I have told her myself, hey, listen, you can criticize Rollo and people like him all you like, but at least they're putting their voice to this. I've told her that myself.
Yeah, I was upset with Miss Ali. She said, I don't care if Rollo is drunk or sober or something, and she has no fucking guts, whoever she is or he is, because you never know. Miss Ali, get your ass onto Discord and come on and debate John LeBron. She says she wants to listen to you, not me. Do you know what I mean? She wants to listen to you, John.
I can't blame her for that. I think there's probably, if I'm being honest with you, there's probably more people out there who would prefer to listen to me than listen to you. Now, in terms of Mr. Ali, I agree with you. I wish that she would put her voice to her thoughts because she has lots of opinions. For whatever reason, she chooses not to do that. But I agree with you. I wish that she would.
Yeah. Oh, what about... Well, ring John Laws, 1-300-564-2... 1-300-564-652, and ring John Laws. Not now, because it's coming up to the... What are you doing for the long weekend, Jono?
No major plans for me, mate. North Melbourne plays St Kilda tomorrow, so I'm catching up with a mate to watch that. And we'll probably just talk about
it. Who are you going for? North Melbourne?
Yeah, I'm a North Melbourne fan. Yep.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I'm really struggling with that, mate. Like, I want to keep some parts of my former normie life. Like, I don't want to let go of it all. And I would like to have 3 hours a week where I can just watch football and have some escapism. Because I don't really watch TV as such these days. So 3 hours a week of escapism, watching a football team, catching up with your mates and just talking some shit. I think there's a certain healthiness to this, right? But here's the problem. North Melbourne are now leading the charge for gender equality, right?
Oh, yeah.
And it's just a complete... It's a joke, man. It's a joke. It's a joke.
Let me tell you a couple of things. My best friend, Tony... it's a Collingwood fan. Good old Collingwood forever. They played the game side by side. We stick together to uphold the Collingwood name. Carlton name? I changed from Collingwood to Carlton because of my friend Tony, because when his mother died, and my mother died last year. I got to tell you, I do still like a little sports. And if you lose that, I mean, what the hell? What the hell is going on? But there are more important things in life, and I agree. If you're going to, I'd love to rock on down to. Where are you, in Melbourne or you're in Brisbane?
No, I'm back in Brisbane. I was just down in Melbourne.
Oh, you're back in Brisbane. Well, you're in Brisbane. Look, yeah, I really do. As much as. I hate to say it again, but my wife doesn't like you, and a lot of fakeologists don't like you much, but I do.
Well, because it's funny.
Are you
going to
get the? Are you going to get the?
I'm one of the few fakeologists.
You're going to get the
war is a hoax and history is a hoax, and I get so-called fakeologists arguing with me about that, and it's like maybe I've kind of outgrown fakeologists. If I'm getting attacked for saying that war is fake and history is fake,
maybe I have kind of outgrown the place. Do you know what I mean? Which is a shame because I've got nothing but.
Are you going to get the Aussie Roundtable back together again? You, Lindsay, and Ethan. Are you going to get back together again and do it again? Like, look.
Well, I don't know. I hope so. Certainly, that is the rumblings.
I really do.
Yeah, that is what's being said. Yeah.
I really do enjoy those days. What year was it when you and remember with the Aussie Beach TV and the big boobs that you could not take your eyes off the big boobs girl? Oh, God. That
I didn't look at her boobs once, man. You watched that footage from start to finish. I did a very good job. I keep my eyes on the camera and, yeah.
Well, what the hell's wrong with you? There's a good set of boobs. You should have been looking at them.
Well, I didn't want the camera to pick that up, so I was looking directly at the camera. And
well, that means you're lying then. If you didn't want to look at the boobs, I would have been looking at them straight away, all the way. Do they still go, the Aussie Beast TV crew?
That's a good question, and I do not know the answer to that question.
Yeah. Oh, it was so much fun, though, when she came and interviewed you guys. Yeah.
Yeah, it was. It was good. It was a good day. Those were the good days, mate. I used to have a beautiful little apartment there in
let's reminisce about old times. Jeff C, what's Jeff Cunt up to these days?
I don't know, man. I keep hearing people talk about him, that he's still active. I'm like, well, I haven't watched the guy for a long time, so.
You remember I waited for 40 minutes or 50 minutes on a Google Hangout to get one question out of the guy?
Yeah, you asked him about September Clues, if memory serves.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
If only he could have responded to you and said, well, Rollo, the thing is, in 3 or 4 years' time, Simon Shack is going to release an alternate cosmology which reinforces the same bullshit foundations and premises, and you and the rest of fakeologists are going to distance yourselves from it.
All right, here comes that. Here comes that. Hold that thought.
If you like this audio and want to support the site in a small or big way, please hit the PayPal donate button on the side of the fakeologist.com webpage. You can show your support for as little as $1.19 a month by subscription or one-time donation. Thank you for your support.
Or you can, $20 a month at jlv.com. Is that right?
No, people have missed out. That was the foundation membership offer. That's closed now.
That's
so the joint my website is now closer to $30 per month. It's gone up.
$30 per month.
Yeah, it's all not right. It's not for people who don't know how to budget their money, basically. So,
So continue on with where you were going there with that thought before. We were
said you wanted to reminisce, but I mean these are all clowns. Man. To be honest, they're all clowns. I mean, can you tell me one person in this scene other than myself who talks about the fact that history is a hoax? Name me one other person.
He's not with us he's not online anymore, but he's Jan Erik. Jan Erik is one of the...
Is he a researcher? Where can I find his content? Does he have a website?
Yes, he does. Over at... If you go to... Now, his name's Kyle, and he's uploaded a 54 gigabyte... what's it called? What do you call it? BitTorrent? And you can find it over at hoaxbusters.com.
Yeah. So he doesn't have his own website then?
Kyle does. You'll be able to actually find it at hoaxbusters.com.
Has he released, say, a 5-minute video that gives you an introduction to his opinions on these topics?
Kyle? He's not here at the moment to defend himself, so I'd rather not say anything. But he's a nice guy. And, he's taken the effort. What he's done is taken the effort to put all the Hoaxbusters, all the fakeologist audios into one BitTorrent thing.
Well, that's good. That's great. That's not really what I'm asking, is it? Like, in terms of people, because everyone has opinions, but in terms of people who say, right, I've got an opinion, now I'm going to do my best to get the evidence, present it to you in a logical way, so you can see what I'm trying to communicate with you. Those sorts of people, of which I am one, are you aware of any who are saying history is a hoax and let me show you how? Are you aware of a single one? Because I'm not, other than myself. Not a single one. Not a single... I'm the only person I know of who says, guys, ancient Greece, fake. Ancient Rome, fake. Ancient Egypt, laughably fake. Ancient China, joke.
All a joke. The ancient Mayans? Complete joke. I'm the only one I know who's doing that.
Right.
So there's all of these researchers out there. All of these researchers, and yet there's only one guy who seems to have cracked the history hoax case. Now, how is that possible? Explain that to me.
Well, I'll say this. Anyone wants to hear that? That ancient Greece, ancient Egypt, ancient Rome is a hoax. Go to fakeologist. Go to johnlebon.com, and you'll get that truth for $20 a month. There you go.
Like I said, that was the introductory offer, but that's closed now. And people had plenty of warning. They can't complain about that. I released, it must have been close to a dozen videos this year alone explaining this, so people can't complain.
But if you want media fakery, let me put it this way. If you want media fakery, and this is where we have not diverted, 9/11, you know, the sort of new codes, the sort of...
Let me tell you why. Because people only know about World War II thanks to the media, okay? They're all media stories. I come along and I say, well, World War II is a hoax. No, I get so-called fakeologists arguing with me. How is that possible?
Well, again,
have you looked at a V2 rocket recently? Go to Wikipedia, look at the V2 phase, look at the photos. It is a clown show. Complete clown show. Now, what am I supposed to believe? That Adolf Hitler was a real guy and there was a real war. They just had some fake
real footage of Adolf Hitler. I mean, there's real footage of...
Oh, give me a break. I can show you real footage of Saddam Hussein and... what was his name? Osama bin Laden? Doesn't mean they're real people. Doesn't mean there's a real war going on. It's all a joke, man. It's all a joke. So don't try and tell me that fakeologists are stuck to media fakery. Ab has, but his site has been infested
now. Look, I'm not going to speak on behalf... John LeBon, don't ever presume. I'm never going to talk on behalf of Ab because he's not here. Fakeologist is not here. I'm only talking on behalf of myself. Now, there's a lot of evidence to say that the Luftwaffe bombed the east end of London. They didn't bomb the whole of London. There's a whole lot of evidence.
There's evidence, isn't there?
No Jews were gassed at Treblinka or Bergen-Belsen or Auschwitz or whatever. There's a lot of evidence, but there's a lot of evidence that war was going on, and there's a lot of evidence to say that war was real, and there's a lot of evidence to say now that we don't need war anymore. War is a war of words now. War of words. War of ideas. War of people who think the wrong way. Wrong think. You must know this. You've read 1984. You've read George Orwell.
I'm pretty sure I'm the only one.
Wrong think is now, and you're lucky to still have this ability because, YouTube, if you want cute cat videos, if you want, you know, bullshit or The Last Jedi is a piece of shit videos, you've got that up your ass. But you don't have people questioning, people like Fast Value questioning the David Hogg bullshit.
There's tons of people questioning the Parkland shootings.
Yeah, but the thing is, yeah, but people like Ab has lost his account. Fucking Simon Shack lost his YouTube account, and you said it yourself. You lose all those comments underneath. Now Ab might think that's something that shouldn't they shouldn't worry about. It worries me because it worries you too. Because the comments underneath, you can re-upload a video.
Oh, you're rambling, mate. You're rambling. This is getting silly now. Come on, try and make a point.
All right. If you can re-upload a video, but you lose all your comments, all the people that have commented.
Dude, what are you talking about? You've completely jumped from one thing to another thing to another thing. What are you going
to do? All right. Okay. Go for it. Where did I
media fakery. Here's what we're talking about. Media fakery, right? Thank God Ab has run this site, right? Very beneficial for me, and he's helped lots of people by doing this, and it's terrific to see that more people are thanking him by sending him some money. I think that's fantastic, right? How else can you show your appreciation? This is the easiest way. You can instantly send him money and say, right, go and spend that. Go and buy something for yourself, or take your wife on a date night. Go out to a nice restaurant or something, right? Let me say thank you for all of the time and effort that you've put in that has helped me to see that X, Y, and Z are fake, right? He's done terrific work. It is a shame, therefore, that this site seems to have been infested with people who either have no interest in serious discussion or are incapable of serious discussion. Such is their hatred of people like myself. And so, just a few weeks ago, we were trying to discuss the war hoax. and myself and Dave J, we were saying, of course war's a hoax. Think about it logically. What is a war? A war is when you've got two sides genuinely trying to kill each other. Well, there aren't two sides. There's only one side. Ipso facto, war is a hoax. Here's some supporting evidence. V2 rockets, take a look at them. Completely ridiculous. And you know what happened? We had people arguing with us about that. I had people arguing about that.
But you can't say, remember, you can't have Dave J on your side.
Yes. Yes,
Dave J on your side. Dave J says Tony Abbott and Tony Blair are the same person.
Well, he's got every right to say that. If that's his opinion, doesn't he? If that's his opinion, does he not have the right to say that?
Or would you, Blair?
I'll answer my question. Does he have the right to express that opinion?
Of course he does.
Of course he does. So what are you complaining about?
He's a moron for saying it, though, because they're obviously not.
Many people would call you or me or people listening to this right now a moron for not believing that 9/11 happened.
Not believing.
So what's the point of the
Tony Abbott and Tony Blair aren't the same, literally the same person. They might be, I don't know.
Well, that's your opinion, and you're entitled to
whatever. But they're not the same.
Opinion. You're entitled to it. You're completely entitled to that opinion.
Oh, good God. All right. I think we'll end it there. It's always fun to talk to you, John. Christ. Oh, fucking mighty. Where are you going to go? Fucking Julia Gillard and, what's her name? Jodie Foster are the same person. You know, Frank the Salt Guy stuff. No way. It's just rubbish. There you go. It's discredit by association.
Oh, you think Dave J's been sent to discredit you, do you?
Just don't think Tony Blair and Tony Abbott are the same person.
No, the normies would have loved this week. And all of if it weren't for Dave J saying that Julia Gillard
The normies
were almost convinced to reconsider their opinions if it weren't for bloody Dave J.
Yeah, but you used Dave J to back up an argument.
They sent this crazy dude, Dave J, and they've completely discredited all media factory.
That's crazy. He is crazy.
Well, people think that you're crazy. People think that I'm crazy.
Well, no. Well, look, I don't care what people think of me. As long as...
I've got 6,000
as long as they don't think that Tony Abbott and Tony Blair aren't the same person, as long as they know
get
that.
This, get this. Got crazy. I've got 6,000 YouTube subscribers. Say about 1,000 of them are active. Of that 1,000, I'm putting to you the majority still believe that missiles can fly horizontal, right? That is, at the same level, along with the Earth, without wings. Yeah. They still believe a missile can do that. They can fly, right, horizontally, parallel to the Earth, without wings. They actually believe that. Even though I've tried to show them, even with MS Paint diagrams, this is basic. Just look at the force vectors, right? The phenomenon that we call gravity, the fact that things fall, should be making this missile go down. Now, it's getting no lift because it's got no wings. So this thing should not be able to fly parallel. Shouldn't be possible. Even many of my own YouTube subscribers will say, nope, it is possible, JLB. This is a thought experiment, or you've gone crazy, or whatever. So who cares, man? If someone doesn't agree with you, or if you don't agree with somebody else, why call them more? Why get...
Well, look, I agree with you totally. I do.
And the thing is, I got that idea, I got thinking about that, thanks to 1984 by George Orwell, which everybody talks about, but I'm convinced I'm the only person who's read. Because if you read that,
I've read it.
When did you read it? When did you read it?
It was a few years back, and yeah, it's a fantastic read. And again, I saw the movie as well. I like the movie as well. Who was it? John Hurt and Richard Burton?
All right, so you read the book. Do you remember the book?
I do suggest it, all fakeologists. You can download the audiobook if you want.
Do you remember the book? You say that you read it, but do you remember it?
Winston, yeah, and how he's changing. Yeah.
All right, do you remember the scene where he goes to a bar and speaks to a regular member of the Proles? Do you remember that scene?
Again, my memory's not the best, but you...
See, that's the thing. People tell me they read this book, but they can't remember shit about it. What's the point of reading a book if you can't remember what was in it?
I remember the essence. I get the essence of it, like, you know what I mean.
What was the essence of it?
Well, it's like if you can't learn from the past, like we're living it now, where newspapers aren't real anymore. They're basically on your screen, so they can, like, I've watched news stories. pop up on my feed, and then, like, within minutes, it's changed, completely changed. And they can do it real time now. Back then, Winston had to cut out, like, little bits to change, and that was his whole job. That was his whole job, was to just cut out little bits and change it. But they can do
it.
Do
you think that's the essence of the book, do you?
I think so, maybe. Yeah, but what, you explain to me what you think. I mean, everyone's got an opinion. Certainly.
Yeah, so changing the news, that's the well-known thing about the book. That and what they call Orwellian surveillance, right? People being monitored. That's what people know about the book, but that's a superficial element to the story. It is significantly deeper than that. And yet no one seems to know this. They tell me they've read the book, and then I think, well, what does reading mean to you? Is it just turning pages and looking at the words, or is it thinking? And I put to you, with the greatest of respect, and to many people listening right now, they, in their minds, they think, no, I've read the book. But no, you haven't, because you haven't understood it. So it's just like looking at words on a page, isn't it? That's me, isn't the same as reading it, engaging with it, thinking about it. There's much more to the book than, oh, they changed the news, or, oh, they have cameras watching us. That's only a superficial element to it. There's a section there where Winston is being interrogated by O'Brien. And O'Brien is explaining to him, we run the show, Winston. We run the show. And Winston says, well, you don't run the whole show, right? For instance, you don't run the bones. There were bones here before you got here. And then O'Brien says, Winston, who do you think put those bones there? That was us. That was 19th century biologists who did that, right? In other words, there was nothing before us. In fact, O'Brien says that. He says, before us, there was nothing. And if man could disappear, then after us there would be nothing, okay? This isn't merely talking about the 19th century biologists. This is an existential claim that's being made. They're exploring a metaphysical concept of what is real, okay? Is there real without humans to interpret it? That's what's going on in that scene. But I never hear people talking about it because they haven't really read it. By the time they got to that section of the book, if they got to that section, which I doubt, if they got to that section, I didn't even notice what was going on. They were just flicking through the page trying to get to the end. Just trying to get through to the end, trying to get through the end, not even really engaging with this, right? So Winston says, okay then, maybe you put the bones there. What about the stars? You didn't put the stars there. They were there before you, and they're millions of miles away. And O'Brien says, millions of miles away? What are you talking about? We just made that up. We've got a dual system of astronomy going on right now. And if we say they're that far away, you guys just believe us. But they're not really that far away. It's all a joke, right? I'm paraphrasing here.
That's fine.
How much of what we think we know about our existence comes to us from organic thought, critical thinking? I suggest to you that what Orwell is trying to put to us in that book, and Orwell could be one man, it could be a team of people. It's a book written by God knows who. Is that actually everything we think we know about our own existences comes to us from the people who run the show. So it's not merely that they change the news. They control people's minds, right? And then O'Brien says to Winston, how many fingers am I? And Winston's like, four. And O'Brien's like, no, not four. And then he tries to convince him to say there's a different number, five or whatever number he went with, right? The number isn't what's important. What's important is that you and I might say four, but where do we get four from? As little children, we were raised to look at a symbol and say, one, two, three, four, right? We were told to give those numbers. But where do numbers actually exist, okay? One or two or three, where do they exist? It's an abstraction, only in the mind. In the real world, there is not two of anything. There cannot be two of anything. There can only ever be one of anything. You can say, oh no, there's two cars. They're not the same car, they're different cars. That is a human subjective assessment, but that's two. But it's not really two, it's one. It's one, but we say, no, it's two. They look the same and they're different. No, they're different. They're not the same at all. That is a human subjective projection onto those objects that there are two of the same thing. There are not. What is a car without humans? I'm not saying who builds the cars without humans. I'm saying you put those two objects there, it's a human mind that says they're the same thing. Now, what we're talking about here is ontology. What we're talking about here is metaphysics. Okay, these are philosophical concepts that go way beyond a simple, oh, well, they lie about the news. So people tell me that they've read the book, and I say, I don't think so. With the greatest of respect. If I say that I've read the book, what I've done is different to what you've done. I think you've flipped through the pages at best, but that's all. Just my opinion.
Yeah, that's fine. But look, again, John, maybe you've read the book a little too closely than I have. C- Coconut, what do we got here? Coconut Warhorse wants to join us in a couple of minutes, and hopefully he can give you a back and forth. But I'm going to go and I'm just going to go for a break at the moment because that was a tour de force on 1984. Look, not everybody reads the book. Look, I've read The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Have you read it?
No, I haven't.
You haven't? Well, there you go. I suggest you read The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It might help you a little bit. So I'm going to go on mute for a moment.
Well, you just said it will help me before you go. Maybe it will help me.
I'm not going anywhere. I'm just going to have a break.
Just explain it. Maybe it will help me. Just tell me how.
Douglas Adams wrote a book about... It's a little fictional novel. It's this thick. It's tiny, and it's so wonderfully wonderful. It's the most wondrous. And look, and even if you don't want to read it, there's a TV show called...
No, I do want to read it. There's millions of books I want to read. I just want to know why you brought a particular one up. Because what I think you did
was
you're trying to say, oh, well, I've read a book that you haven't read, JLB. It was the same thing, like a one-up mission.
All right, George Orwell, I think it's very important, but I think... Also, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is also very important.
He's going
to
explain
why. I can, because it's very entertaining, and because you are such a good use linguistics, language, argument, all of that is in there. It's explained in there, and it's done in a comical way. I think you'd enjoy it.
I think
I just want you to have a laugh.
I just don't see why you brought it up, though. I don't see the relevance.
Well, you were just, you just went through 1984, and I just don't have your expertise on... You know George Orwell's 1984 a lot better than I do.
Because I've actually read it. I've studied it. And then people like you say to me, well, why should people be paying for what you have to say about these things? Maybe because I'm the one that's actually doing the work. I'm actually reading,
George
studying.
George Orwell already wrote it, so they don't need to pay for your interpretation.
No, they don't need to. Maybe they'd get a good interpretation if they did. Because if they come to this place and get free interpretations, they get shit, trivial interpretations.
I'm not giving an interpretation. You're the one giving the
interpretation. You're the one who brought the book up in the first place.
Yeah, I'm just saying that, go to johnlebon.com, $20 a month, and you can get your interpretation of it. Or you can just go to amazon.com and buy the fucking thing and read it yourself. There you go.
How about that? That'd be my preference.
Good. All right. Coconut Warhorse said he's going to be here for a couple of minutes, so I'm just going to go on mute and chill out after that, see if Coconut Warhorse wants to give you a bit of fun and games.
Well, they're on mute, so I can't hear them. If you're speaking, Coconut Warhorse, we cannot hear you. Well, we've lost Rollo. That was an interesting chat, but it is probably time for me to wrap it up now. So on the 29th of March, 2018, just recapping some of the things that we've discussed today, we were looking at the Tychos model and a discussion about this model taking place here at Fakeologist.com and also at Peace of Mindful. Very interesting. The whole Miles Mathis, Simon Shack deities of POM and Fakeologist.com respectively. Then we were joined by Rollo, who wanted to discuss the ISS video of myself and Gino that we made recently. And we also discussed a few other things, the cricket, this lynch mob mentality, the hatred in people's hearts here in Australia. Give them somebody to hate and they love it. 2 minutes of hate, straight up. Give people someone they're allowed to hate, encourage them to hate them, and my God, just watch it come out of them. It oozes out of them like bile. Like it's just been pent up, and they're like, really? We're allowed to attack someone now? Yippee! Off to the races they go. Goodness gracious me, we're talking about some very, very angry people. So we discussed that for a little while. And then towards the end of the call, we discussed 1984 a little bit, which is always interesting. Of course, 9/11, nobody died, nobody got hurt. Dave J knows that. The people want to attack Dave J because they disagree with him about some things. Oh, he's been sent to discredit, has he? Oh, okay, yeah. Because the establishment are really scared of people discussing the truth. Yeah, yeah. That's why they give us this technology, to do exactly that. They're scared of us. They're afraid that if we all know, then what? Tell me. Explain it to me. People find out that no one died, no one got hurt, then what? What's going to happen then? Oh, then there'll be marches on the street. No, they won't. What the hell are you talking about? What is this nonsense? Marches on the street? What are you talking about? What on earth are you talking about? The average person doesn't care. and they'll never care. So long as they've got their bread and their circuses, they aren't marching on shit. Are you marching? No, you're not. Oh, I'm waiting for more people to come. Are you waiting for more people to come to do the marching? Yep.
Yeah. Okay, can I ask you a question, John? Can I ask you a question? When you and John Adams were having the chat the other day, and I really did appreciate that hour and a half chat. If people who question the bullshit that we're, you know, experiencing on our, you know, our laptops or TVs or our smartphones or whatever, you said that they wouldn't be better in charge. What was that all about?
What I was saying was that. Like, say the angry people who, as they've been listening to this call, and look, some people out there in fakeology world are lovely people, don't get me wrong, but there is an element of people who are angry, and they actually like listening to me to get angry, the same way that you used to watch Fox News or CNN to get angry. That's what these people do with me. They've got anger in their soul that they want to vent. Now, those kinds of people, do you really think that they would be good in charge of the other humans? Because I say no. No, they would not. No, they would not. There's this idea that people have that, oh, you know, if we all knew the truth, then we could take over and run the world better. What? Most of the people in this scene, not all of them, I've met some lovely people in this scene. In fact, just the weekend just gone, I went and saw Gino, who I met through this. I went and met Harry L., who's been on fakeologist.com. I went to his place in southeast Melbourne. He invited me over. I went over there, chatted with him for probably 2 or 3 hours. It was lovely. It was fantastic. I met his family. Lovely guy. So there are good people out there. But there's also an undercurrent of victim mentality, bitter, jaded, angry people. Do I want those people in charge? God, no. Goodness gracious me, no, I do not.
So you
no way. Do you?
Malcolm Turnbull.
He's an actor.
Yeah, I know he's an actor, but I'm just saying that. Do I want you and Gino in charge? Yes,
no.
Because you guys have got a sense of humor. You guys have got a sense of humor, like, unbelievable.
You would want me and Gino in charge of all the other humans.
Australian. Yeah, Australia. Why not? Better than Malcolm Turnbull. Fucking hell. I call him Malcolm Turnbullshitter. Bullshitter, yeah.
Bro, here's the problem we've got, right? If Gino and I were in charge of us, just say I was in charge of Australia. So, okay, not even in charge of, suppose I was the chief puppet, I was the prime minister, I was the chief actor. I could not be honest with these people. Okay, suppose the Australian cricketers get done for ball tampering. If I was being honest, I would come out and say, guys, relax a little bit. These Australians that were competing against South Africans who have done the exact same thing several times before, and it's against the rules, and they'll get a one-match suspension from the ICC, but that's all, okay? They're real people with real families, real lives. Let's not be lynching them, right? You know what the Australian people would do to me? They'd try and lynch me. Right? Because they're angry people. The masses,
yeah,
the problem.
But are you a coward? Are you strong? Are you strong or are you a coward? Like, seriously.
What are you talking about?
I
don't think you understand the point I'm making here. Even if I was a chief puppet, they wouldn't leave me in chief puppet for long. Because the people would turn on me. Because they hate honesty. The proles and the masses detest the truth, okay? People like you have it in your head that people want the truth. No, they don't. If they did, they'd go searching for it. They detest the truth. What they love is emotions and passion. 2 minutes of hatred is a good example. So you couldn't have someone like me in charge. I'm too honest. What they want is Turnbull to come out and say, yeah, rabble, rabble, rabble. Those cheating bastards, they disgraced our country. Blah, blah, blah. That's what the masses want. That's why Turnbull's giving it to them. The masses do not want truth. Okay, the average person does not want truth. This is the fact.
And you say people like me, I'll give you truth, but I don't want to run the masses. But you seem to want to have an elevated. Where do you see yourself in 5 years, Jonah?
That's a good question. I hope that within 5 years, I have found myself a good normie job and stuck to my frugal livings and saved up enough money that whether it's 5 or 6 or 7 years, I'll have enough money saved that I can move to a poor country and buy a property, buy land to live on. That is what I would like to imagine that I've done. But to do that, I do need to find a good normie job and save money. That's what I need to do. I can keep doing what I'm doing at the moment. I'm just getting by doing what I'm doing and I'm enjoying it. But I can't keep doing this my whole life. It's crazy. So maybe another year or so of doing this, sort of tying up all the loose ends, releasing all the research that I've done, only with the people who I actually care about, which is the people who care about me, which at the moment is about 50 people from what I can tell. And once I've done that, then move on and get a full-time normie job and just save money, man. Because if you're a single man who does not waste money, you can save money quickly with a full-time normie job. So yeah, to answer your question directly, hopefully, you know, 35, 36, I've put at least a bit of money behind me. That's my hope.
I would only suggest to you, if you're in it for the real reason, look at that book I suggested to you, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I suggest you read it.
Thank you for the suggestion of a book. I've got people suggesting to me books all the time. What they won't do is read the book, take the best bits, and then share it for me in a 5 or 10 minute video. They won't do that.
All right.
That's what I do. You see, that's what time is for.
We've got Faye joined us. Faye's joined us. Would you say hello? Faye, John LeBond, Faye.
I want to ask if it's okay, John, if I stay for some minutes. I'm waiting for John Adams.
Yeah, that's cool. This is not my live stream, so.
No, I know, but I don't want to disturb your discussion. You were just talking right now, about saving money and going to a country where it is... interesting to live and cheaper to live. And it happens that I have quite some people around me that are in your age, and they are doing exactly the same. And I don't know, maybe it's a difference working in Australia and working in Switzerland to save money, but Simon, that's a young man, 28, he went to Peru just with, I don't remember, 800 francs he had with him. And he stayed there for 2 years, and he met a nice girl, and he brought then the girl here to Switzerland, and then he goes back again, and he's going to live there. I just wanted to say that sometimes saving money can be also like an alibi to postpone. Maybe sometimes in life, one should just jump into the cold water. Just my opinion.
Well, it is a thing now. I'm not sure about your friend, your young friend over there, but this is a growing thing now. They call it digital nomads, people who generate their money online via different ventures and then can live in poorer countries compared to where they grew up and where most of their customers are, and they can lead frugal but enjoyable lives. That's kind of what this idea of digital nomadism is, nomadism.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm thinking. Maybe down the track might be a thing. I mean, my website at the moment still doesn't generate that much money. But who knows, maybe in the future, maybe if I work a bit harder, maybe focus my attention on things that have a wider mass appeal, who knows, maybe that could be an option, you know, down the line. Who knows?
I think it's a great idea, actually. Yes, and if I had your age, I think I would do that. And I would not actually wait for enough subscribers or something, because the subscribers you have now, as I show on your website, which I visited only a few times because I don't have enough time to visit all websites, but it's quite a closed audience, let's say, from the surroundings you are really also working with on your topics. I guess if one is nomadic, there happen other things. And I wish you much luck, John.
Well, I appreciate that, Faye, and I think you're being genuine, so that's nice. At the same time, here at Fakeologist, there's a group of people who wish me well, and I'm very thankful.
No, I wish you really well. I don't hate you, just to be clear.
No, I'm sure
absolutely
you don't.
Absolutely not. Absolutely.
No, there is an undercurrent here, though, at this website of people who do truly, like I am their Goldstein. Like in the 2 minutes of hate, where you're allowed to hate someone,
There is an undercurrent of people on this website where I am their Goldstein. They have never met me. They have nothing to do with me. But I am their lightning rod to vent all of their bitterness and anger at the world. They directed at me. And they would love to see me fail. I've got no doubt about that. There are people out there who would love to see me fail. And that's the nature of this realm. That's the nature of the ACT realm, of the truth movement. These are the kinds of people it attracts.
I'm not sure it's like that, really, because maybe I don't talk with those guys who you're speaking of now. But there is something between you and others when you are talking, but I'm not sure it comes only from the others. It's something like a dynamic that has helped you also. That's my view, you know, because you have gained also attraction out of that. So it has also positive aspects.
I agree with you about that. I've had people sign up to my website and say they didn't even know who I was, and they heard these people saying nasty shit about me. So they've gone to check out what I was saying, and they've thought, hold on, this guy's speaking sense. And they've thought, I want to hear more. So you're right, there is a positive element to it. But as a person, as a human being, it does get tiring when you're just trying to discuss things with people and all they want to do is be negative, attack you. Why are you doing this, Joby? Why are you doing that? It's like, relax, man. Like, there's so many things we can talk about, and all you want to talk about is what you think are my motivations? What is this nonsense? And I think one of the reasons is because this boogeyman meme has infested the brains of many people here. They truly believe that there are boogeymen out there. But they're not called boogeymen, they're called page shills or agents. Okay, they truly believe there are agents in the midst. Boogeymen, right? You see this even in organized religions. People believe in demons. Oh, there are demons. Demons control us. There's a demon. That person is possessed by a demon. That person is saying what he's saying because he's a demon. We have to ostracize him. It's the same retarded bullshit mindset. And it has infested the brains of many people here.
I think you're right in that point, but there is also another side of that, because the medium in which we meet here is predestined for such thoughts, you know, because it is a medium where every one of us, we are all ghosts, and as it is the nature of the ghosts, you can never be sure if the ghosts you call are the ghosts that come. In the end, maybe the ghost says, I'm Peter, but it is Mary. That's the medium, you know. It's the medium of suspicion.
Yeah, I agree. It is it's relatively anonymous. People can't see each other's faces, and, you know, it makes it easier to project our own mental image onto people. So if we have a mental mindset that sees the world as good versus bad, as page shills versus honest truthers, then if we disagree with someone, we project onto them page shill. Because we can't even see their face, so we just project it onto them in our minds. I agree about that, 100%.
What I'm wondering is, you're a very smart guy, and I'm wondering, why can you not find a better strategy to avoid this closed, let's say, point where you are standing? You could have more influence, you know, with your stuff, but you always maneuver yourself in discussions in the corner, let's say. So it's a dynamic which I cannot understand why it cannot be stopped.
Well, I appreciate you saying that I'm intelligent. I'm probably not as intelligent as you think. I'm really just a regular person, and I'm probably not very different to your young friends, your neighbour, other than I'm aware of media fakery, and I've spent 2 or 3 years investigating it. But in terms of intelligence, like natural intelligence levels, I'm probably no more intelligent than most of the young people who you mix with. It's simply because I have spent so much time looking into these things and reading books and studying books and thinking about things and trying to produce content, so I've had to get my thoughts very clear that I might come across as intelligent, but I'm really just a regular person. So if I ever make mistakes in dealing with people, well, that's just a person making mistakes in dealing with people. You know, it's not necessarily an intentional thing. And then in terms of...
I actually didn't mean that you made any mistakes, you know. I experienced it also once with you, that there comes a dynamic in the discussions, that is one way. You know, you can also smell it, really. You can smell it. Oh, shit, now comes this dynamic and you cannot stop it. You know that it goes like a spiral. And it afterwards, it's not possible to come to a common sense, let's say. So, because to discuss means somehow to be relaxed, to be just open, not to want something specific as a result or something. Maybe it's that, I don't know.
I agree with you. I've seen that spiral too, and I've experienced it enough that I can now sort of see when it's. And I've noticed a strong correlation between the number of people in the call and the way it devolves into attacking JLB. If it's just me talking to one or two people, it's usually fine, not a problem. But once you get five or six people together, suddenly it becomes stacks on JLB. All of a sudden, it's almost like people feel they've got a strength in numbers and now they can let their vitriol out. I've seen it so many times here at Fakeologist. So many times.
I can understand it. I have not seen it or listened to it, but I understand it, and I know that it was.
Well, I think, with the greatest of respect, I think you were there to see it just a few weeks ago when the topic of the war hoax came up, and all of a sudden, all of these people suddenly joined the call out of nowhere. Originally, it was myself and Dave J and Rollo. All of a sudden, all of these people joined the call, and all of a sudden on Fakeologist.com, I had people arguing with me saying, you can't say that war's a hoax. And I'm like, yes, I can say this. Oh, no, you can't say this. I know a guy who told me that he knew a guy who lost a leg. I'm like, what on earth are you talking about here? War is supposed to be between two or more parties. There's only one party who runs this show. Ipso facto, by definition, war is a hoax. No, you can't say that, JLB. It was like a stacks on situation because all of these people came out of nowhere.
It was more complicated in that discussion, Sean. It was more complicated.
It was no more complicated than that from my perspective, and I restated my position several times. The people did not want to focus on what I was saying. They wanted to focus on their own venom, their own vitriol, their own ego, rather than, hold on, I'm just a person.
Yeah, look,
I've explained to you why I say war is a hoax. It's a very simple argument I'm putting forward here.
I believe you that you believe that, but I have a completely different view.
Which you're entitled to. However, if I'm putting forward to you a simple argument, what is supposed to happen is we focus on the argument. If my argument is fallacious, let's find the fallacy. If there's not enough evidence, let's focus on the evidence. But that's not what happened. I had people trying to have semantic arguments with me.
Yeah.
I had people trying to tell me, people who agree with me that war is a hoax, arguing that war is not a hoax. It was complete insanity.
It's very good. Yes, exactly. It was a difficult moment. And, yeah, but it is also a good example for what we were saying previously, that if you are, or not you as you yourself, but just anyone, that's when I say you, I mean anyone, I mean myself or anyone else, if you are really focused on proving something that you believe, that is not a discussion. It hinders. You are not open to my arguments, if you concretely then. And it's something different. It's a debate, maybe we can call it. Let's do a debate about war is a hoax. I prepare my arguments, you prepare yours. But that's then not a discussion. We are not searching together what is war. And I do not really know how much of that you believe is hoax is true. And how much of my opinion, which maybe is not so in-depth because I didn't study the topic, maybe there are millions of topics. We cannot know everything. So is it a discussion or is it something else? And maybe there is a point, John, that sometimes either you have already a position because you have already studied something. Let's say Tesla. You have proven, in my opinion, and I have seen it, I have followed it, you have proven that this person is probably a sin or an invented character or whatever. But you cannot talk with someone who has never confronted the topic. Oh, sorry, you can, but it's not very successful then, because the other one cannot follow. He has to go in a defense modus.
Well, you said something a moment ago that I agree with. It's not really a discussion. If two people are talking past one another,
it's difficult to have a productive conversation. Excellent. And what I think happened a few weeks ago with that war hoax discussion, or that war hoax chat, was that I was saying, guys, let me present to you a very simple, straightforward argument. Argument in the philosophical sense. Premise, premise, conclusion. Here is what I'm trying to say. And I think what happened is several other people in the call wanted to argue for the sake of arguing. So rather than focus on my simple argument, which they actually agreed with, they wanted to focus on other things for the sake of arguing. Now, my time is finite. I don't want to argue for the sake of arguing, but end up going around and around in circles. People who actually did agree with my argument in a philosophical sense, but wanted to argue for the sake of arguing. You see, that's what I think happened. So that's not really a discussion. I agree with you. What could have happened is someone could have said, well, actually, your premises, your conclusion is sound, I'm with it. That being said, however, let's explore what really did happen in what we call World War II. If it wasn't a war, if the idea of war is a hoax, let's explore what did happen. And then I say to them, well, I don't know what happened. They don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear that because I'm telling them, I don't know what happened. I wasn't there. All I can tell you is here's the official story. Here's the problem with it. So you can see if we stick to a simple, let's discuss what we know, the discussion doesn't last long enough to become the argument that these people are looking for. What they want is an argument. Why this is, I don't know. It seems to be some part of their brain. They feel good arguing with JLB, even though they agree with me. It's insanity.
It's complicated, but it's not insanity. It's really complicated. And to understand it, maybe one should invest time and reflection. What really happened? What was the basis? What do I mean when I say this is a philosophical question? What does the other mean? In my understanding, for example, everything is war. You know, that's if you're arguing, I meant it philosophically, and in my abstract thought it is a hoax, I would then argue in my abstract understanding everything is war. War is the reason for all. So, you know, there it's so complex. And then it is also what did the other say before and what emotions were around and why did Dave J. or what was his name or is his name, why did he have to be so rude to Gaia and what was the meaning of all that? And you know,
well, you bring something up that's worth bringing up. You say that to you, war is more than the definition I gave, and that is perfectly fine. We can define any of these terms how we like. However, philosophy 101 is we get our key terms clear at the start. To do anything else, to say to me, well, JLB, I've got a different definition of war, so I want to talk about that. Okay, fine, but that's a different discussion. Okay, if you try and make it part of the same discussion, it is equivocation. We're now using the same key term in different ways. It's no longer a logical discussion. And I tried to explain this. The other problem that we had was that because there was three or four people, maybe even five, who wanted to argue with me, I didn't even get a chance to explain these basic concepts. And to me, these are basic concepts. And I was fortunate. I studied philosophy at a tertiary level. This was all explained to me very clearly. Here is a logical discussion. Here is how it's meant to work. These are not rules of absolute truth. These are simply techniques of discussion. If you use these techniques with someone else who knows these techniques, you can have a productive conversation. If, however, you use these techniques with people who either do not value or do not know these techniques, then you're going to waste your time. I was fortunate that I learned that a long time ago. However, it's one thing to learn something. It's another thing to put it into practice. And I suppose looking back a few weeks ago,
that you need the others, you know. And as I understand now, it is not only the others, quote unquote, that cannot develop their thoughts in such situations or atmospheres. It's you also, because you cannot articulate. In the end, you were not able to say what you really mean by war is a hoax. I didn't understand it. Or I understood.
No, you didn't understand it. Quite right. I don't think most people in the call understood,
yeah,
despite my repeated attempts to make it as clear and concise as possible.
Yes, but that's what I mean. That is the situation. We should try to understand what is exactly, what are the problematic elements in such situations, and try to avoid them the next time and do it better the next time when we discuss.
I agree. And so from my perspective,
I
am here. I was asking if it was okay with you guys if I added something to the conversation.
Absolutely. No, John, have you had a coffee?
No, I haven't.
I haven't, so make a coffee and then.
Here's an observation, John, and I hope you're having a good day today, by the way. This would be from my perspective from the first time I listened to you talk, and you know, since you and I had such a good discussion last time we talked, wanted to add this in, that the first time I heard you discuss something, and I think maybe other people might possibly feel this way, is you sound, and I'm not saying you're like this, by the way, because I don't think you're like this, but to the first person who listens to you or who doesn't understand what it is you're saying, or like you were saying, they don't know how to have a philosophical debate or philosophical discussion, you might come off kind of contrarian for the
yes,
sake
I
of...
think that's a fair criticism. I think a lot of people believe that I've had people who actually support what I'm doing say that they think that I'm playing the devil's advocate. And a good example is when I say that I don't believe in missiles, okay? Wingless missiles that we are shown on TV, I don't believe that they're real. I don't believe they can be used to track down targets kilometers away. I think it's all a joke, right? Mm-hmm. I've had people say to me that they think that I'm just performing a thought experiment, that this is me playing devil's advocate. They think I'm being a contrarian, and I understand that because there are a lot of people out there. I live with one. He's a nice guy, but he actually does enjoy in conversation. No matter what the conversation is, he will take the opposite opinion. That's just how he interacts with other humans, right? So there are people out there who do that. In my case, because so many of my opinions are essentially the opposite of what the average person believes, they assume, oh, he's just doing this for the sake of doing it. They're not able to grasp the arguments that I'm presenting. So I think you and I are probably in agreement about what you're suggesting here.
And what you're saying is just for people who would maybe be listening to this, is that that's absolutely not the way that you're coming at a conversation, because, like I said, the first time I heard you, that was my assumption. I assumed wrong. I've told you that. I've told you I've changed my opinion about the way that you have conversations, and like I said, I really enjoyed the last conversation that we had, but my first assumption is that you were being contrarian. So you're saying you're definitely not being that way, right?
That's correct. This is not me. This is not me putting on a contrarian act, right? In fact, this is like almost. This almost works perfectly in a meta sense. I'm at fakeologist.com saying that I believe that war is a hoax, and I've got people contradicting me, even though at the fundamental level they agree with what I'm saying. They leave in that last call that we had, or that call that I had with Faye and a few others a few weeks ago. Some of them actually told me they agree with me, and then went on to argue. So it's almost ironic in a sense that people would see me as the contrarian when I'm the one at fakeologist.com saying war is a hoax, and people are contradicting me. They're agreeing with me and then arguing with me for the sake of arguing. So to me, there is a contrarianism going on, but it's not from me. I'm being quite consistent and quite clear in what I'm trying to articulate. Here is my definition of war. Here is what is actually going on. That does not match the definition of war. If so, facto, war is a hoax. And then people will argue with me. So who is... But when we think about it, who is actually being the contrarian here?
I have an idea who could be. But it's a... may I, John? Or?
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. You mentioned that you studied philosophy. And there is an old Greek proverb that if you study something, you have afterwards, you have to not practice it exactly the same long time as you studied it, in order to regain the power upon yourself, or let's say the authority upon your brain or your thought. So I somehow have the like a feeling when you, John Le Bon, I mean yet now with John, when you discuss, you are very under pressure to do something right in with the thoughts to not do anything that could be, I don't know, it has something very German in one from one point of view, and I think this could maybe be one aspect. Another one is possibly that the audience with whom you discuss are not on the same level as you are. Maybe they cannot follow you.
Well, I think that's true, and I'll give you an example. I'm not the only person who this happens to. If you listen to Chris Kendall's debate with the vegans, he was trying to approach it from a logical perspective, and as he and John Adams discussed in their after call, it only works if both parties or all parties are trying to stick to the same logical framework. And the vegans,
the vegans were not
doing that. So without a common understanding of what logic is, without a common understanding of a framework of epistemology, then yes, you will oftentimes be talking past one another and essentially wasting your time. This does happen. And I think there are lots of people out there who, they love conversing about things for the sake of conversing. This is part of human nature. Humans love to converse about things and argue about things, and that's how they pass their time. Only some of us are here to do that as a means to an end, the end being a better understanding of ourselves and the world around us. And this is where a website like mine that has a barrier to entry, the only people who are going to pay the money to enter are people who are here to do more than just converse. You can converse anywhere for free, but if you want to go somewhere where there is an accepted minimum standard of understanding of epistemology, of logic, of these kinds of things, well, maybe you have to pay for that privilege. And I think that's what I'm proving with my website. There are people who value this enough to pay for the privilege to partake. The people who aren't actually here for logical discussions can get free discussions anywhere, dime a dozen. Google Hangouts, TalkShoe calls, whatever, Discord servers. There are many places you can go and discuss whatever you want, but it's just going to be a back-and-forth discussion in most cases, unless you're lucky enough, as I have been recently, to have a call with John Adams. I have a call with John Adams here on Fakeologist, and he understands logic. I understand logic. We have a different idea of 1984, and it's significant, but we can look at what each other is saying and say, oh, here is where I disagree with John Adams. He has said this, 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 and this. I disagree with one of his premises. Now I'm going to discuss the premise with him, right? Because he and I both understand, or at least he comes across as a man who understands, a basic idea of what logic and epistemology is. But you have to be lucky to get that kind of conversation, because there's just as much chance you're going to run into someone who is here just to argue for the sake of arguing. That's the risk you take.
I have a small question. I understand that completely what you say, and I second it. I find it okay, I find it good, I find it constructive and pleasant also. Listen. I listened to your talk with John and also to the debate between Chris and the two vegans. And my question is, do you think that logic is an instrument for all kind of topics, or are there topics that could be of interest that you cannot approach with logic?
Well, when I'm using what I call logic, it's just one framework. And so the way I understand the word logic, it's just something that I can use to try and convey ideas in my mind and to other people. Is logic the truth, or is it the only method for arriving at the truth? I say no. I think perhaps there is a room for faith. Perhaps there is a room for a personal revelation. I'm open-minded to that. The problem is that your personal revelation is yours. There's nothing that I can do to scrutinize it.
Yeah, you took it too abstract, you know. I meant it really more simple, let's say. Logic is an instrument. It's a system of thought or a category. You can call it what you want, but I think we understand what we mean both. It's similar what we mean.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
And, for example, with logic, you can approach some topics, that is sure. and it creates understanding then. My question is, do you have topics also, or have you encountered topics where logic, as you define it, is not helpful, but it's, for example, confusing or doesn't bring any results?
Did everybody disappear?
Didn't you?
No, I think she was asking you that question, sir.
I apologize, Faye. I didn't catch your question. From the moment that Bumper started to just now,
Okay, shall I repeat it, or do you want us to leave the discussion, or I don't know?
No, I'm enjoying this chat. This is pleasant. Okay. Once upon a time, this is what I came to Fake Old for, was just people who wanted to just have a conversation. And it's only really been...
Can I re-ask the question for you, Faye?
Oh, yes, please, John. You can do it better.
Yeah, because I think you're getting it lost in translation a little bit.
Oh, much. You are right.
So Faye's asking you, John, if you think that there's any situation where standard logic like would actually hinder you coming to a conclusion that would be better when not using logic.
Well, obviously that would depend on what the word logic means. So what I've spent a lot of time trying to convey through content on my website is what I mean when I talk about, say, for instance, a standard form argument. So if I have a conclusion that I believe in that I want to share with you, I will try to break it down into its premises and show you how those premises lead to the conclusion. And then, if necessary, I will show you what evidence I have for the premises. So, for instance, let me just think of an example off the top of my head. Say my conclusion is that you should take a jumper with you when you leave the house, right? My argument might be as simple as, you will be more comfortable if you're in good warmth, and outside, it is very cold right now, and if you wear a jacket, you'll be warm. Therefore, you ought to go back to your room, grab a jacket before we leave the house, okay? So there's a number of premises involved to lead to the conclusion, and some of those premises you might even be able to test empirically. I can open a window and say, look at this. The cold has come in. It's 10 degrees out there, see? So I'm presenting to you a conclusion, but I can show you the constituent components that lead to the conclusion. Now, that's a trivial example. That is a very basic thing, you know what I mean? You'll probably never need me to prove to you that it's... But I'm using this one to illustrate the point I'm trying to make. When I'm talking about logic, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. I'm talking about premises leading to a conclusion. That's what I'm talking about. Now, if I'm trying to convey an idea to you, I can't really think of an idea which would not benefit from being conveyed logically. There might be, if you can give me an example of one.
Yes.
But generally speaking, the kinds of conversations that I'm here to have, they make more sense to me to try to convey to you my ideas with what I call logic, with what I call logic. I'm not saying that logic are universal laws or absolutes. They're not, in my opinion. They're just a framework for trying to convey ideas.
It was a good example, I think, that you brought, and I have just now an idea how I could express what I mean with my question. The example outside, it is minus 10 and you should wear a jacket. Would you then accept if I say I want to feel the cold snow on my face?
Yeah. So you might retort to me. Yeah. So to use the same example, you might retort to me to say, no, I don't need a jacket. And the reason why is because I want to feel the cold today. So we're agreeing that it's cold outside, and we're agreeing that a jacket would make you warmer. Those two premises were on the same page. The premise that I got wrong was the assumption that you do not want to be cold. So by identifying that one area of disagreement, we save all the time arguing about the other things. You're not trying to say to me, oh, it's warm outside, right? But that's not what we're arguing about here. What we're talking about is the premise that you want to be warm, and you'd explain to me that's a wrong assumption. I want to be cold, and then I say, I change my conclusion. My conclusion was that you should take a jacket. Now, knowing what I know, you're right, you should not take a jacket. Well, let's go, you see? And that's the beauty of logic, is that by identifying what the premises are, we can avoid wasting time arguing about the things we agree upon and focus on the areas where we disagree, should that be our choice. And so to put that in context, a few weeks ago,
I was simply trying to explain that war is a hoax by definition. Here's my simple definition. I was hoping to get that established to move on to further discussions. So it was effectively a premise of a later argument. But people would not even agree with that. They wanted to argue at the most primitive level, at the most rudimentary level. So I never even got to discuss the argument I wanted to get to.
Yeah, but it's like, I would say, okay, with minus 10, it's maybe too clear, but let's say it is minus 3. And you say, don't go out without a jacket, because it's minus 3. And I say, minus 3 is not cold. And I mean it. Because minus 3 is not cold for me. I live in Switzerland. Okay, with minus 3, personally, I take a jacket. But with 0, sometimes I go out and drink a coffee in my garden. Without a jacket, when the sun shines, and it is 0. So you see what I mean? The premise that you bring into the discussion has to be commonly verified. And with the term war, which is a term that is almost as old as our languages are, I think it needs a little bit more than just to ask the others, do you agree, do you not agree, because it is also somewhat degrading when you say, hey, if you don't believe war is a hoax, you are an idiot or something.
No, I agree with the central point you're making. You're saying that the definition I provided was my own definition, and you don't have to accept my definition. I agree with you about that. But I wasn't trying to get anyone to agree with my definition. I was saying, if this is the definition, and this is mine, then war is a hoax. Now, if someone says, I have a different definition, I say, that's fine. That's no problem. That's not a problem whatsoever. If you want to define war, I was like, if you want to define war in another way, that's fine. However, you can't then say to me that you define war in a different way, and therefore war is not a hoax, and that I can't say war is a hoax, because I've shown you why I'm saying war is a hoax.
No, that's
but this is what was happening.
Clear,
I had people trying to tell me, you can't say war is a hoax. I'm like, yes, I can, and here's my argument for why.
Well,
just Faye, just hear me out. They were then saying that they had a different definition of war, and therefore I could not say that war is a hoax on their definition. But I've provided my definition, and I've made it clear what I'm trying to say. So you see, they were equivocating, effectively, and they were wasting everybody's time in the process.
Yes.
Well, if you're gonna have a discussion, too, if you're going to have a discussion with someone, I just want to add this in, and someone like John... basically, what he's stating is when you're having a discussion, we are going to discuss. There's going to be a discussion, and there's rules of engagement. And the rule of the engagement is, I'm saying that war means this, and based off of this premise, you either agree to agree or agree to disagree. Based off of this premise of this definition for this discussion.
Yeah.
Right? And then you move forward. If you say, okay, I agree to engage in this conversation and I agree to agree with that definition or I agree to disagree with this definition, now we can move forward with the discussion. So, I'm speaking hypothetically. I'm not disagreeing with John, but just for the sake of hypothesis, let's just say, I agree with what you're saying in this context, John, but I disagree with your definition. Now let's move to the phase where we argue the definition of what you're speaking, or we say, after we come to a particular either philosophical agreement or disagreement, we decide, okay, now we're going to argue points on the particulars of whatever war may or may not be and the conclusions that we come to based off of stories that we've heard about it or X equals this or whatever.
Right? I agree.
So in those type of things, that's just another thing. I think when John wants to come on here, I'm just stating this for the listener, the person who likes to participate in discussions with him or with other people, then those type of discussions, their premises kind of set for the particular discussion. Maybe some people don't understand that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think if you want evidence that school does not exist to make us
smarter, in a very broad sense of the word smart, it is the fact that we're not taught this basic idea of premise, premise, conclusion, standard form argument. We're not taught to explore what epistemology means and the different frameworks that people can use. I mean, most people I know, even people who did very well at high school, they don't know what the word epistemology means. And it's not the fact that they don't know what the word means that's important. It's that, to me, that is a signal that this is not an area of thought that they've explored, right? And this is why you'll see people arguing past one another, prove this or prove that or disprove this. They've never even really thought about what the word prove means in their own mind, let alone what it means to their interlocutor. So they're going to be arguing past one another almost as a matter of routine. They've basically been set up to believe they're so smart because of 12 or 13 years at school. They've been set up to have this massive ego, again, in the broad sense of the term, this idea that they know the truth, but they haven't been encouraged to explore what that word truth even means.
Hard, John. Why must that be now so hard, you know? I can understand what you say, and I agree, really. Not everybody can discuss in this frame. Not everybody can also discuss about football or about cooking or about whatever, painting or... But every human being has exactly the same non-value as everybody else. So I would never be so hard with
I'm not really sure I know what you mean. I'm pointing out that there is a distinct difference between people who understand a certain method of communication and people who do not. There's a distinct difference between them. I'm not saying that one is morally better or inherently more important than another. But what I will tell you is that with my time being finite, I would far rather spend my time with people who understand these ideas than people who do not.
Yes, of course. That's a moral obligation, I think, because otherwise you cannot evolve yourself, and it's not useful for the others also. I just criticized, you know, because you said then comes the egoistic aspect, and it painted somehow a picture of others, quote-unquote, that are bad or not good enough or something. And I think
let me give you another example, right? Those vegans, look, I don't know what is the ideal diet for a human. I don't. I wish I did. I am open-minded to everything from veganism through to basically what a friend of mine is doing, which is eating nothing but animal products, and he swears by it. I'm open-minded to those two ends of the spectrum and everything in between. Now, when I listen to Chris Kendall debate two vegans, I'm going to get more out of that conversation if all of the participants have the same basic understanding of logic that I have. Because that way, the stronger arguments will become clear over the course of 1 hour, 2 hours. However, if I'm listening to people making emotional appeals, appeals to consensus, appeals to authority, the World Health Organization or whatever, if I'm listening to one group do that, which is fallacious, and I'm listening to another person try to focus on the evidence, that conversation is going to be like a canoe with a rudder on only one side, okay? It can't really help me because they're not going to be properly scrutinizing the evidence. Even if Chris Kendall's evidence is good, the other ones, or even if it's bad, the other parties don't know how to scrutinize it. They're too busy making appeals to authority or whatever, you see? So me as a participant, as an audience member, I benefit from people sticking to a basic conception of what is logic, what I call, and what many other people call logic. So this is not just a matter of me sticking to this for my own benefit. I always appreciate there are people listening to this conversation right now. There are people listening to this podcast, not as we speak, but at some point in the future. They will benefit from me and anybody I speak to trying to stick to logic. There's an inherent goodness that comes from this, in my opinion.
It's absolutely, you know, I agree absolutely with what you say, and maybe I just don't find the words to add. This little thing that I lack in all this frame. Yeah.
Let me answer something you were asking earlier.
Oh, yeah.
And so if you're say you're researching something or you're looking into something, or maybe you're, I don't know, waxing poetic, for lack of a better term, you don't have to stay within the confines of logic to do those type of things.
But
in order to convey your findings to someone, that's where that tool would come in. So it wouldn't necessarily confine you within the bounds of what it is, what it on your journey or whatever it is you're looking for. But if you wanted to tell somebody about what you found, you would need to have logical confines because, I mean, basically, and I think John would agree with me on this, it's like if he knows what a hammer is and I know what a hammer is, and I'm trying to tell him about how I used a hammer today at work, and then all of a sudden I start talking about a ham sandwich instead of a hammer, and he's going to be like, what are you talking about, ham sandwich? I'm all, yeah, you know, the tool with, you know, the blunt edge and then the other side on it that pulls the nails out. And he's all, you mean a hammer? I'm all, no, a ham sandwich. That's not being logical, and that's not confining yourself to being able to convey logical information to another person.
I agree. But, I cannot say it better, but I have to find now the translation door. I'm just saying, logic, as we mean it in our common dialogues, where we search for consensus and expanding of understanding and common understanding, of course. This kind of thing that we call logic, isn't that always, from one point of view, only the minimum that would be possible as communication and understanding? I say why.
But tell me if I'm wrong. Here's what I think you're getting at. There's an idea that logic...
An instinct?
Yeah, like logic, cool. What we're calling logic, is only one method for arriving at opinions or beliefs that are beneficial to us as humans, right? There might be other things as well. And what I'm trying to be careful to do, and I've got a whole page on my website, videos that took me hours and hours to make, a 15-minute video takes me hours to make, where I try and explain what logic means to me and why I think it's useful. And I make it clear. This is effectively a form of communication. It's like a language within a language. This is not the truth, and it is not even necessarily the means to arrive at the truth. This is simply a way to communicate our ideas more clearly to ourselves and to others. That's all it is. Now, when you have children, when you're around children, sometimes they'll get very angry. And you'll say to them, calm down. Whatever you want to say to me, it's going to be more clear to me if you just calm down, okay? Don't start yelling at me now, just calm down. It's a very similar idea. It is, if you want to convey an idea to people, some ways make more sense than others, right? For whatever reason that is, for whatever existential reason it is that we as humans understand some ideas better than others, it tends to be the case that when we break our arguments down into premises and conclusions and we come up with a basic framework of premises leading to conclusions that are fair and ones that are not fair, it seems to work better. It seems to work better. It's not the truth. It's merely a means of communication.
I understand.
Whereas what I think what you're suggesting is that it's not the only means of communication, and I agree with you. Yeah. However, for the purpose of being in a place like it is, I think, the most effective one. So rather than appeal to each other's emotions, I mean, there's an argument that if a poet gets on stage and gives a rendition of a poem that is completely illogical but tugs at people's emotions and makes them feel a certain way and they give a standing ovation, then this is a special thing in and of itself. No need for logic, okay? He has generated an experience for the people in the audience that they wanted to get, they paid for, and they'll pay for again next week. And this was a worthy use of their time. No problems at all. But that poet is engaging in a very different thing to what I'm trying to do when I come to a place like this.
I understand that. And that's, you know, the place like this is for me important that you mention it now, because I think that one reason why to insist in logic in the dialogues that are happening here is actually a good option, because it is difficult, the topics are difficult, the persons are difficult, the medium is full of suspicion, etc. And that's actually also a factor that minimizes the potential of dialogue, because even if a dialogue has to be of logic, let's say type, of logical type, because you need a processual thought and you need to collect and to evaluate and to, verify things in that logic. Even if that is the case, dialogues can be beautiful. Logical dialogues can also be beautiful, but then they are very upspaced, let's say. And what I miss sometimes in the discussions, especially with you, John Le Bon, is maybe because of the situation we described previously, and I think we were both of the opinion that it is not quasi your fault, quote unquote, and not only the fault of the others, it's the constellation and the position in which you fall, let's say. But I miss actually this space that is when discussions happen. And that's why I was insisting that logic is necessary sometimes, but it's not really enough for a good dialogue.
Well, I think I understand where you're coming from. And it is, if I understand you properly, a fair criticism of me is that I'm using these conversations as a means to an end. And so my end is a better understanding of something outside of the conversation. It's the world around me. It's this experience, this existence. A lot of people, the conversation is the end in and of itself. They want to feel a certain way during the conversation. And this is true of not just fakeologist calls, even things like reading, right? If you compare one of my pieces of prose, one of my pieces of writing, with, say, someone like Miles Mathis, whoever's responsible for his work, let's just say Miles Mathis, right? He's much better at telling a story, and he uses more similes and allegories and even tells more jokes. It's an experience to read one of his pieces of writing, more so than mine, which tries to be as concise as possible. Here is my evidence. Here is my logic. Here is my conclusion. And you could argue that as someone who is trying to attract an audience or communicate ideas, that my writing is too dry. I do not use enough emotive language or what have you, right? And so it is in conversing with me. There's a lot more focus on the evidence and the logic than there is on the feelings. If this is your criticism, it is largely a fair criticism. It is largely a fair criticism if that's what you're saying. All I could say in my defense is I'm not actually here to try to convince people to my way of thinking. If I were, I would use more rhetorical ploys about feelings and emotions and similes and allegories, but I actually don't want to convince people to my way of thinking. What I want to do is present what my way of thinking is so that if others can see flaws with it, they can point it out, or if they see the inherent value of it, then they can adopt it. But I don't actually want to convince people to my way of thinking. As bizarre as that sounds to most people, it actually makes no difference to me if somebody believes that war is a hoax or not. It makes no difference at all to my whole life.
Actually, to be really honest, I prefer your style than the style of Miles Mathis, because the style of Miles Mathis, I have concluded, is manipulative. And I don't like manipulative approach. So it is not, you know, I don't think it is better or worse. It's just that's the category I have found out for me. And what you just explained was quite close to what I mean, but not exactly what I mean. So I would like to say two more phrases, and then I think John is waiting already to say something. Actually, I was meaning that if you approach me to discuss with me in the live stream, I'm very concrete now to say it very fast. If you approach me and want to discuss with me if Tesla existed or not, and I'm aware of that, and I am informed about the topic, and I can, you put the question, I answer, okay, let's discuss, then it is okay. But sometimes I have experienced it as if you have the aim to get something out of the discussion without the other to have been asked. So it is a an imbalance that comes out of your aim to discussed to an end, as you say, but without having be clear about that, maybe. Something like that. I'm not quite sure.
I think if I were to be more careful, I could preface every conversation with my overall framework of operation, and it would make it more clear to people. At the same time, can you imagine how cumbersome that would be? And you see, one of the things I have done is I have, in my opinion, debunked a lot of the sacred cows of the so-called truth movement. Tesla's a good example. I got into looking at Tesla because somebody told me that we know what Tesla was up to because of files from the CIA. And I was like, what? Because I had no interest in Tesla prior to this point. So I went looking into Tesla. This was 2 years ago. At the time, I was so oblivious. Just hear me out. I was so oblivious to Tesla, because this is a good example. I was so oblivious to the Tesla myth and narrative. Not only did I not know what the myth was about him, I didn't even know how important he was to so many truth of people's frameworks. In their mind, this was a great inventor who was taken down by the establishment, and so that feeds into a whole bunch of other narratives that are very important in their minds. Then, when they hear me discussing Tesla with you or with anybody else, that part of their minds is overriding any part of their mind that might value logic. And so you see it is what I would call an emotional response to what I'm saying. The logic doesn't change, regardless of whether I preface it or not. I'm still saying, guys, I went looking for his books. There are none. The books that are in his name, they admit that he didn't write them as books. They were articles from an electrical experience magazine. Right? Yeah. Basically like a penny magazine that were taken after his alleged death.
I watched your video, John. You don't need to explain it to me. I watched your video.
Well, the context is that whether I preface what I'm saying with my epistemological framework or not, the basic thing that I'm doing remains the same. And people who get upset by it, it's not because the logic is in error, generally speaking. Yes. It's because the topics that I've chosen to tackle have such an emotional pull with people, whether it's Tesla or heliocentrism or war. And you could say that this is a fault of mine, that I've tackled topics that are too important to people, that I should focus on the baby things instead, where we all agree that these TV events are fake, so no one's going to get angry at you for saying that. You could argue that I've gone too far with my topics and I should stick to what the wider audience prefers. You could make that criticism of me.
No, you just should maybe take into consideration, and you know it, I think, better, or at least as well as all the others here, that some things are very difficult to overcome emotionally. It's like with 9/11, or I don't know. But apropos Tesla, did you look into Reich? Wilhelm Reich is also one of these characters. The psychiatrist, I don't know if you know him at all.
Wilhelm Reich. Is it spelt Reich as an English speaker? The name is familiar, but I don't think I've spent much time studying.
Yes, it's a similar story with Tesla. He was the one who wrote about orgone energy. It is a kind of energy that can be produced in closed orgonometric, I don't remember. He was a psychiatrist and psychoanalyst and collaborator and critic of Freud, and he spent most of his life in prison, and all his papers were destroyed by the CIA or something. I didn't look into that, you know, but I just thought maybe it is interesting.
Well, there are lots of these characters of history,
yeah,
who I would love to spend time, whether it's debunking or analysing or whatever, I'd love to. There's so many of them, and there's only so much time. And so the material that you see on my website about Tesla, that is the product of between a week and 2 weeks of full-time work, right? The amount of time it takes to track down these people's primary sources or to discover there are none, which is often the case, and then read those pieces and compare that with the secondary sources and the official mythos, and then present it to the public, the amount of time that it takes to do that properly is phenomenal, which is what I think is the main reason why no one before me has done that with Tesla, right? Because I used to puzzle about this. How can some regular dude from Brisbane, who is not that intelligent, be the first one to realize that this Tesla story is completely make-believe? and that he might potentially even be an entirely fictional character from the start, but certainly what we know of him today is ridiculous. How could I be the first person to do this? Well, in the 2 years since I did that, I've come to realize that there are very few people putting this kind of time in. It is exhaustive. No one wants to do it. People have got better things to do. They want titillation and they want to be amused by their telescreens. So this is why. This is why. So
people.
Someone like Wilhelm Reich. So someone like Wilhelm Reich. Would I love to? Because I'm just looking at his Wikipedia page now, and I can already see in my mind exactly how I would tackle this topic. Yes. But there are so many of these characters in history that you know.
You don't
I
get
might
any
never
funds
get time.
From any university because they study some, spectacular imaginative spheres or something. Because it needs time, and time has to be paid somehow, and our academies do not work in the right direction anymore.
Yeah, right. Reich's, what's Reich's book called? Like The Psychology of Fascism?
Yes, that's also him. Yeah.
And he had another one.
Listen, you small human being, or
man? No. He had another one. The sexual revolution.
Yes, that's also from him. Based on this theory with Orgon.
Right. He had the like the Orgon meters or whatever, like
yes.
Kind of Scientology type stuff. But in any case, he's basically the guy that they went to when they started the beatniks my brain's getting slow here because it's getting late, but the students in Europe when they
in the 60s
in the 60s later on after the beatniks, but a lot of the beatniks were into Wilhelm Reich, and then later on in the 60s in Europe in France, the student uprisings, they were all kind of quoting him, and weren't they like allegedly writing stuff on the walls, like quotes from him of his books or something?
Yes, not only from him, also from all this. Who was the anti-psychiatrists of London, of the London School, were also very en vogue. Ronald D. Lang, and I don't remember the names, I have to look it up.
Right.
But Wilhelm Reich, you are right, I remember now.
He's the guy to, I used to know this information a lot better, but he had something to do with Freud's daughter.
I don't know that. Can be, you know. I never looked into the privates of the authors I was reading.
Yeah, they kind of what they'll do with these guys initially is another good example is Ezra Pound, where they kind of create these heroes, but they're kind of sanctioned heroes.
I've never read Ezra Pound, to be honest.
Okay, well,
he was accused to be a fascist. Maybe I didn't.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, and he moved to Italy so he could live in the fascist state. But he was most likely an intelligence officer.
Okay.
Instead, but in any case, they kind of give these people exile or if I'm remembering correctly, Reich was thrown in jail for some sort of violation of some sort with his Orgon machines.
Yes, exactly. And all his work was destroyed because it bared some potentials that were bad for the elites or something. I think it's a mythology around that. That's why I mentioned it previously. Because after I listened to that work of JLB, I was thinking about Reich to look myself into it, but I didn't find the time yet.
Yeah, another guy who has a similar name, has a similar story as like Reich and then Tesla, is another guy, is Royal Raymond Reich.
What is that name? Roy?
Royal Raymond Reich. He created like this he allegedly created this anti-cancer machine that can like vibrate the cancer, like it resonates on a vibration that can
never heard of that.
No, and allegedly the rock, this is the story, is that the big, you know, big pharma, big medical, didn't want this machine to come out, and so what they did is they put him in prison to stop it from coming out. But what it did is it created this kind of like thing you used to hear on Patriot Radio a long time ago, or like the natural health snake oil salesman type stuff, is people would sell these Rife machines to people claiming that it was going to cure their cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And it created this whole myth around this guy, Royal Raymond Rife, and there people were able to sell books about his life, about his work, and sell these alleged machines that were going to cure cancer. But it was all based around the I would call it like the, you know, it's kind of like martyr myth.
Mm. I just found him.
Same thing with Tesla. Like John is saying that there's the martyr myth that you had this genius who was suppressed by the man. In the case of Tesla, if I remember the story correctly, he had alternate current figured out before Edison did, but J.P. Morgan was giving both of them money to fund their experiments, and he decided to go with direct current instead of alternate current because alternate current was going to free the world.
Mm, okay.
Right? And so they.
The counter narrative for the guy with the cinematography.
Yeah.
You just said his name. I cannot remember.
Thomas Edison.
The
story is they're both experimenting with electricity at the same time, and how to, you know, I mean, you have to think about this. So why would J.P. Morgan? This is an interesting part of the story, and I know it's kind of a digression, but this is an interesting part of the story. Why would bankers be funding two guys to figure out how to electrify like neighborhoods? If that's the case, if the given story, it's because electricity meant control. Electricity meant you could figure out how to tax people and energy, figure out how to tax their energy.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. So.
But the question was, why did they fund two guys, or why at all?
Yeah.
Why at all? Well, I think that's clear, because it's useful for the industrial production. You can process everything much faster.
Yeah, and I see what John's saying, that, you know, maybe I don't know if Tesla didn't exist for real, but I also, he may have been, you know, some kind of a front man for something. I know Chris Kendall's proposed that before on calls that we've done, that Tesla was probably...
Well, I won't try and convince you guys, but let me just ask you a question.
Sure.
Have you ever noticed that there's only three or four photos of Tesla and no video footage? Has that ever occurred to you as being a little bit odd?
I've never noticed that, so I was unaware.
Once you notice that you can't stop seeing it, because Tesla is constantly referred to, whether it's on Red Ice or these other so-called alternative outlets, even in the so-called truth movement, people are always talking about Tesla, and whenever you see a thumbnail of an article or a video about him or a podcast, you'll see the same two or three photos of him, the same two or three, and that's because that's about all there is, and there's no video footage whatsoever, none, zero. Now, this guy supposedly died in, I think he died in the middle, late 1930s. So this is well after the advent of moving picture, of what we might call film, long after that. And he was a man who was involved in technology.
So of anybody who might be recorded, you'd think he'd be one of the first and foremost, but no video footage at all.
John, that's because they've suppressed all of that.
Suppressed, yeah. And that's what a lot of people, I know that you're being facetious, that's what a lot of the Tesla believers will tell you. They'll try and tell you that he's been written out of the history books, and yet there was a Hollywood film starring Hugh Jackman and yes. David Bowie.
The Prestige.
The Prestige, yeah. He's not being written out of the history. And there's all kinds of History Channel. There's all kind of History Channel so-called documentaries about him. This guy's front and center of like mass public consciousness. In fact, the cars, the modern technology cars, supposedly produced by Elon Musk's company, are called Teslas. So far from being suppressed or anything, he's actually a very obvious candidate of a story or a narrative that's being pushed. And so I went to try and find the primary sources, and this is another thing that Antichus is, what is a primary source, what's a secondary source, why is it important to understand the difference, etc. This isn't taught to most school children, at least in Australia. When I tried to find the primary sources of Tesla, all I could find was these magazine articles. In one of them, he claims that he passed the entire electric current from a hydroelectric dam through his body. He had one arm connected to one cable and another arm connected to another cable, and he passed the current of an entire entire hydroelectric dam through his body. Now, when you think of that image of a man passing current through his body through two cables, what do you think of? Because most people who I've asked this, they think of Superman, because there is footage of Superman doing that. That's a Superman thing to do. It's a Superman story.
And Highlander does it also. That's a later movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I'm quite confident that, and it gets better, the Electrical Experimenter, which is the magazine where Tesla's articles, many of them were published, including the ones that went on to be his so-called books, was run by a guy called Hugo Gernsback. He was the publisher of the Electrical Experimenter. If you win a science fiction writing award, to this day, which award are you winning for writing science fiction? You're winning a Hugo. That's the name of the science fiction awards to this day. And who is the Hugos named after? Hugo Gernsback. The very man who published the magazine in which all of Tesla's articles were published. So putting two and two together, what would you come up with there? A man who was such a prolific science fiction producer, to the point where they named science fiction awards after him, runs the magazine in which Tesla's major articles were published, and there's only a few photos, and there's no video footage of the guy. Putting some of these things together, what is the to me it's obvious. What is the inference that some people will go with when this is all presented to them? If they're being objective, it's a fake character. It's a sim character.
Here's another good point is, well, Faye says she's confused. Go ahead, Faye.
I'm convinced because what I saw and listened to from JLB and what I also myself researched, I can say it with a good conscience that I don't believe that it is what is described as that character with these inventions. I believe it is part of this counter-narrative, let's say, which we see many times in the first half of the 20th century, maybe because the concepts of the psyops were of other type in that period. And they had for every, let's say, progress or development that was hidden, they had on the public sphere, they had always a contradictory evolution in some other type of, science or technology. And this fits very well in there. Yeah, please, John.
No, I was going to say another thing is, I remember the first book I ever read on Tesla. It was called Tesla, A Man Out of Time. It was written by a lady named Margaret Cheney.
Uh-huh.
And that book was from the 80s. That was quite a while ago when I read that book. But she gives just kind of a mainline type history. I remember when I read that book, there wasn't even that many books on Tesla.
But she had her book, and that book was like published like by a big publishing house. Like I bought that book at, you know, Barnes and Noble or something. I don't even know if you guys have those in your guys' country, but it's a major bookstore in America.
Well, the name we know.
Yeah. So, anyways, it was a big publishing house, big book. I'm sure if I looked it up, it would, you know, be by Random House or Simon and Schuster or something like that or whatever. By the time you get into the mid to late 2000, you know, 2006, 2007, then you start to see all of the other Tesla books start to pop up where they've added the conspiratorial aspects to it. And, you know, you've got the, I think Trinde has like a Tesla book of some sort. So, you know, or those type of publishing houses that publish other types of publishing stuff, that publish UFO stuff and all that type of stuff. They
100%.
Yeah.
There's a guy called Mark Cipher, who is one of the leading, you know, Tesla experts today, has published several books on Tesla, gets interviewed by History Channel, this kind of thing. Mark Cipher is his name. And the kind of books that he writes other than Tesla, literally Bigfoot and this kind of thing. Now, of course, people will say, oh, well, that's just an ad hominem. Just because he writes about other stuff doesn't mean he's wrong about Tesla. No, it doesn't. All I'm putting together here is a whole bunch of pieces of the puzzle, and people have to make up their own mind. If what I'm saying is true, if there's no video footage of Tesla, if there's only like two or three photos, just Google image Tesla and notice it'll be the same photo but reversed, flipped. There'll be like different backgrounds, but it's actually the same photo. It's pretty clear when you're looking at it. No video footage, only a few photos. His book is not a book. It was articles that were compiled after the fact. Those articles were published in Hugo Gernsback's magazine, and Gernsback is a prolific science fiction producer. And the guy who writes about him today is a guy who writes about Bigfoot. If you didn't know anything about Tesla before and you looked at all of this evidence, what conclusion would you arrive at? To me, it's so obvious. And yet, to this day, I'll give an example. I used to listen to Renegade Broadcasting a lot. This is run by Kyle Hunt. Some people will describe it as a white nationalist podcast. That's not, at least Kyle Hunt's work, that's not what I would describe as necessarily his main thrust. But that's how you might describe him. I'm a little bit, you know, my views have changed about a lot of things, I guess, over the last few years. But I still like to listen in every now and then. He was an inspiration when I was younger. And it feels like I can't go a podcast without hearing someone talk about Nikola Tesla. And it's like, this guy is a idol to many people. He is like he's almost like a Jesus figure. He was a great man who had almost like magical powers, okay? Jesus turns water into wine. Tesla can invent amazing magic, really, technology. And then he's taken down, not because there's anything wrong with him, but by the evil establishment, you know, by the whoever the evil people are, and he's taken down by them. You know, he kind of died for our sins. He died penniless, you know what I mean? It's the same basic narrative, hero narrative, isn't it? And this means a lot to a lot of people. A lot of people need the hero narrative. Even if the hero is dead, they still need to believe there was a hero, because that's almost like proof on an existential level that there is such thing as goodness. Even if it's dead now, it was here before. You know, there is something to believe in. They need it. The average person needs this stuff.
Yeah, that's true. And also, entering the narrative, I don't know if you guys were aware of this little nugget, but does anybody know who was the guy who looked at the papers of Tesla after the fact?
Well, the story that's getting around now is that it was George Bush's grandfather or something, I think, is the story that people are... Was it Trump? One of Trump's family members.
Trump's uncle, yeah. Which he was, if you know, his name was John Trump, and he worked at MIT. He's a physicist at MIT, and he's famous for the working with Van de Graaff, for the Van de Graaff generator. And
I'm sorry, Van de Graaff generator? What's that?
What do you call it?
Because that's a musical band from the 60s, 70s.
Yeah, Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, the band gets its name from the it's like an X-ray thing. It has to do with X-rays.
Okay, didn't know that. Sorry for the interruption.
You'd have to hit up a SMJ for that information. But in any case, you're right. That's the story that's getting around now, that he analyzed the papers in like a hotel room or something when Tesla was right after he died, and it was the story is like he analyzed it or something, and then from that point, like, the government confiscated all of Tesla's papers because, like, they had him analyze it, and then he decided that it was too, you know, it was too crazy of material to be, you know, that the government needed to confiscate it and lock it away for hundreds of years or whatever they do. And that's the story that we're given now. The funny thing is like I said, I read that book by Margaret Cheney years ago, and it never mentions him particularly. Like, it doesn't, it mentions that incident in the book, but it doesn't name any names as to the people. So that information is relatively new to me, and it's interesting that they would tie it into the Trump thing. I don't know if that's what they did or if that's just been kind of, you know, cloaked information for all this time. But it's just kind of funny because I'm pretty familiar with the Tesla story, and it wasn't until like a year or two or three years ago that I first heard that Trump's uncle was the one who looked at Tesla.
Well, while I've got the chance, I just want to correct something I said. I was talking about how Mark Cipher writes other books about Bigfoot or whatever. Let me correct myself. The publishers who promote his work write about Bigfoot and what have you. Cipher himself, according to his wiki page anyway, in 1996 he released Wizard, The Life and Times of Nikola Tesla. Obviously, this has worked well for him because he's written about Tesla a few times since. He does write about what I would call pseudoscience-y things like transcending the speed of light, consciousness, quantum physics, and the fifth dimension. But he himself, as far as I'm aware, has not written about Bigfoot, so I want to retract that statement. But the publishers, the kind of people who published his work back in the day, that was their bread and butter. And, yeah, 1996 he wrote Wizard, The Life and Times of Nikola Tesla. And if you go through his list of books, one of them includes The Man Who Harnessed Niagara Falls, right? So what I told you about Tesla supposedly passing a hydroelectric dam current through his body, that's not just some little throwaway thing from one of his articles. This Cipher guy, who is now one of the big Tesla writers, that's the title of one of the books, right? The Man Who Harnessed Niagara Falls. That's where Tesla supposedly passed the entire current through his body, like Superman. Now, there might be people out there who are like, well, how do you know they can't pass a whole hydroelectric dam's current through their body and live? Like, okay, you're right. I can't prove to you that is ridiculous, okay? Maybe you believe that is plausible. But to me, I don't need to go to a hydroelectric dam and try this for myself to see that this is a silly story. And that's why I try to just focus on, well, what is the story? Find out what the story is, establish what the facts are, and then just let people come to their own conclusion. Do you believe this story is real? And that's, for me, that's a simple process.
Mm-hmm. I thought just now when you were talking about this experiment that he allegedly did, that it was a whole cult from the mid of the 19th century till, I think, after the Second World War, that everything that was produced in the, how do we call them in English, positive sciences, or sciences, I think, only, that they had to test them, the material, on their own bodies. For example, Hahnemann tested all his medication experiments on himself. Hahnemann is this inventor of the homeopathic globuli. It's a whole so-called alternative medicine. And also the first bypass for a heart transplantation was after a test.
If you like this audio and want to support the site in a small or big way, please hit the PayPal donate button on the side of the Fakeologist.com webpage. You can show your support for as little as $1.19 a month by subscription or one-time donation. Thank you for your support.
Yeah, they still do this to today, Faye. This myth of these guys who do this, like Kevin Warwick, the transhumanist guy. He claims he experiments on himself with, and then he has like a chip implanted in his body where he can do this. And I say magic trick because that's what it is, magic trick. He shows everybody how cool it is that when he walks into his offices, his doors open up automatically because he's got a microchip implanted in him that opens doors, which he kind of like does this as like, oh, look at how great this is. You get this microchip implanted and doors just open for you. Not explaining to the public that the doors would have to be, you know, synced with the particular wave that would be coming, emitting from the chip to be able to do that, right? But they kind of sell it like, oh, well, yeah, you're going to get this microchip implanted, and then you're just going to walk around and doors are going to open for you. This is all magic tricks. And the other thing that I was thinking about when John was mentioning it with Tesla and Niagara Falls was they like to do things with Niagara Falls in the 1900s. Especially like when Houdini allegedly went over Niagara Falls in a barrel and survived. So that was another funny magic trick that revolved around Niagara Falls. And obviously Houdini had some interesting background as well. Fellow magician.
Well, I haven't looked into Houdini yet. But if you look at the movie The Prestige, where David Bowie is the one who plays Nikola Tesla. The basic plot line of the film is that magic only works if the crowd believes it's a trick. They want to be dazzled and they want to, ponder, how is it possible that this has happened? Whereas if you give them real magic, that can alarm them. That's kind of like the plot line. And if you look at what people like Tesla do as a narrative device, these are people who you can point towards and say, you know, that magic technology that you're using to communicate with people around the world, that comes to us from this guy, that comes to us from that guy. These great inventors are the ones who develop this technology, and that's why we have it. In fact, Mark Cipher, who I was talking about earlier, he claims that our mobile phones, we owe that to Tesla, right? This is someone you can point to and say, you know, that technology that you all just take for granted now, you can use a small little device that fits in your palm and talk to someone on the other side of the world in real time. That's not magic. That's just technology that comes to us from these individual people. And one of the things I've been exploring lately with my work on my site is, why do we take it for granted that we have this so-called technology that if we didn't know better, we'd think it was magic? Right? And if you took it back just a generation, they'd say it was magic. But we've become accustomed to it, and it's been rolled out just slowly enough for us to say, oh, this isn't magic, this is just technology. This is just people, really smart engineers in white coats probably somewhere, writing down ideas and trialing it. And that's being built by, poor Chinese people who jump out of buildings. That's how this stuff comes to us. It's not magic. It's just technology. And I'm not sure if I've really articulated that, what I'm trying to get at here. I do wonder why we just take it for granted that we have this technology. You know what I mean? Like it just seems to have spread and become ubiquitous, and we just seem to accept that it's just a progress of technology rather than maybe consider that maybe it's much, much more than that. And I don't mean that in a conspiratorial, ooh, they're doing this to spy on us. I don't really mean it like that. I mean more in a, like, what is it that we're dealing with here? Is this just technology where a few smart men have built on each other's ideas and hey presto, I'm talking to you guys in real time right now? Or is it possible that there are other explanations?
May I take this point to tell you two things? One is, I just realized that now we were talking through three continents, from Australia, John Le Bon, to the United States, I guess, John Adams. Is that right? Somewhere in Connecticut, quote unquote, and Europe. And I have to leave. I thank you so much for this discussion, and have a nice day.
It was nice talking to you, Faye. You have a good day.
Bye-bye.
It's probably time for me to get going as well. To be honest, it's 4 o'clock here, and I probably spend a little bit too much time in the fakeologist chats. It's addictive. It's so addictive to come along and just chat. But I've enjoyed it, John, so thanks for popping in, mate. I've been meaning to take our call from a week or two ago and re-upload it as a separate thing. In fact, that was one of my tasks today, so I might go and see if I can do that, because I thought it was a good call. I enjoyed it. So hopefully, hopefully the audience does as well.
Yeah, I enjoyed this chat we just had right now too. I also enjoyed your ISS video, by the way, with your buddy Gino.
I appreciate that. Thank you. That was entirely, and very long story short, I went over to his place because I've met a few people through doing this, and I'm sure you've had people email you and say they want to meet you thanks to your work on Hoaxbusters call. I mean, you've met up with regular people, yeah. So Juno's one who I met years ago, and he has this little green screen set up in his garage. And so I got to his place on Sunday last week. I was back in Melbourne for a thing I had to go to, and I wasn't really in the mood to be silly, but he kind of pressured me into it, and I'm glad he did because it was fun. And I'm going to use that for a future video to say to people, guys, look, you know that Juno and I were not on the ice, but we didn't tell you that. We released it, and we think it's so obvious that we're joking around that only an idiot needs to be told that this is fake. And then I'm going to contrast that with footage of, say, the Apollo moon landings and say, guys, how is this any different? The Apollo moon landings look even more ridiculous than me and Gina, right?
It was funny because I'm subscribed to your YouTube channel, and I saw that come up, and I was even thinking that while I was watching it. Well, I bet you if this came up on somebody's like recommendations or like, you know, whatever, like they would be like offhand, you would be confused as to if this was like a real, like if these really were two astronauts, you know?
Yeah. Somebody wouldn't have to be that stupid to find themselves second guessing themselves. Especially if, like, we were joking around, right? And Gino just gave us both, like, his work uniform, and we just put sticky tape over his work uniform's logo, right? So that no one could tell who he works for, which is fair enough. You know, like, he doesn't want to get in trouble with work, right? So we were just wearing business shirts from work. But if we had have worn, like, if we had have tried to copy NASA, and if we had have, instead of joking around about, you know, transgenderism or whatever, if we'd have tried to do a serious chat, there are people out there who would have been fooled into believing it because belief is their default status. And so where I'm going with this sort of meta discussion, this meta thought is, like, a lot of people want to believe that the people who run the show are evil because, oh, they're deceiving us, right? They're putting out this footage that's fake, and it's wrong of them to deceive us. But who is being deceived? Like, only those who refuse to see. So you could just as easily accuse myself and Gino of being liars, saying, you're not really on the ISS. JLB, you claim that you're on the ISS, right? I know you were joking, but many people wouldn't know. And it's like, that's how I feel about all of the lies on TV. I know they're lying. You know what I mean? And they're giving us, I mean, Gino and I gave you lots of clues that we were lying, right? We were joking around. We were making silly noises and silly faces and, you know, just making stuff up on the spot. So we gave you plenty of clues, but what is the sticky tape on the lunar module? You know what I mean? Isn't that the same idea? It's clearly taking the piss, right? Isn't it?
It's to the point where you can't really be, it's hard to be satirical in this day and age.
Yeah. Well, what got me on this line of thinking was I did a video last year on the Ariana Grande hoax. And I just was mucking around saying, I've got proof that it's real. And I showed footage from an admitted drill. Okay, the drill was admitted. And I showed footage from that admitted drill and pretended that I thought it was footage from the actual event. Okay, so there was like obvious smoke bombs, obvious actors wearing headphones even, and I pretended that this was proof that the event was real. And somehow that video went viral and got like, and it got like 600,000 views. And the split in the audience, it might maybe not 50-50, but close enough to it, of people who knew that I was joking and were attacking me for, you know, mocking the dead, blah, blah, blah. And people who thought I was being serious and were like, no, JLB, you've got it wrong. This is actually footage from a drill, which I had actually said in the video. So what that taught me, like that was an experience that like money can't buy, is that it doesn't matter how obvious you think it is that you're joking. There are people out there who are already in belief frameworks that think they're being real. And so when I look at the liars on TV now, I think maybe to them this is obviously a lie. And they don't feel the least bit guilty because in their mind it's so obvious. It's not their fault if you believe them. And that's how I feel about my video with Gino, right? If anyone did watch that video and think that we were really on the ISS, I don't think that's my fault. Do you know what I mean? I do not take responsibility for someone else looking at nonsense and thinking it's real. And so my point is that I just – sorry, I'll be real quick. My point is just that if NASA or whoever's behind NASA put out obvious jokes and you and I know it's a joke, but we sit around getting angry at them for joking, what do we do with our lives? You know what I mean? It's an obvious joke. Most of the masses will never get it. And nothing you or I say or do will change that. So rather than get angry or take it personally, just accept this is the world we live in. Most people cannot tell the difference between real and fake. This is just how it is.
I do agree with that part of your statement, yes. Yes, I do agree with that.
Cool. Well, I've enjoyed the chat, man. I've got to get going, but I've really enjoyed the chat. And here's to hoping that in the future, more fakeologists will have this open, collegiate attitude that you and Faye have displayed with me today, you know, hopefully. And hopefully I am gracious enough and humble enough to not upset people. How's that for an ending? Is that fair?
It sounds like a good ending to me, Jono. Yeah. Collegiate. Yeah. Lovely word.
Have a good day today, sir.
You too, Jono. Thanks, sir. You too, Rollo. You guys take care.
Yeah, you bet, Jono. It's been good.
Hello, this is SMG. And you're listening to Fakeologist Radio on fakeologist.com.